Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
George Bush's tax cuts he once opposed permanent because it's an impossibility. And I give you the example of abstinence and whether it causes AIDS, whether AIDS could be prevented by condoms or abstinence. He was asked this question in the campaign, refused to answer and claimed he didn't really, he didn't really know that, he kept saying, well, we have a policy paper on that, don't we? We've got something somewhere. Where's Coburn's paper? You know, that's Tom Coburn, who's a very right-wing senator, who says that only abstinence prevents it. But, I mean, if you could be a senator or a congressman now for what, 26 years, and not know that condoms help prevent AIDS, you'd have to really be so stupid as to maybe not be able to read My Pet Goat. So,
well, I don't know. Dr. Frist, our former Senate Majority Leader, apparently could diagnose Terri Schiavo simply by looking at her by video camera, and he said at one point that tears cause AIDS because
right,
that satisfied his right-wing opponent.
They're pandering. I mean, Frist obviously
right.
knew the answer. Coburn knows the answer, and so does McCain.
Right.
They're pandering to these right-wing elements. So
hey, everybody, it's me, and I'm live for just a couple of minutes here. Listen, I'm going to run a rerun of Thursday night's program because of some technical difficulties. A lot of folks had troubles getting the archive and the podcast of that. But just to let you know, the reason I'm doing it is this pain in my neck and shoulder, whether it's a pinched nerve or whatever you want to call it, is almost unbearable. And sitting here in the chair at the production desk is just pretty well awful. No one wants to be here more than I do, but it's frankly not something I'm capable of right now. So I sincerely apologize, but I will be back. I'll do my best to be back tomorrow night. I'm going to go do the flat on my back thing and see if maybe I can get some relief somehow or another and hopefully have things get all better real soon. So we will try to get back to a completely normal schedule tomorrow that features Guy James, Mark Levine, me. Peter Godbold says he'll be back tomorrow night for sure. He's finally crawling out from under his computer hill that he has been in with his real job. Says he'll be back, and we'll try to have a normal schedule all the way around tomorrow. And I apologize for mailing it in tonight, but the fact of the matter is I just don't think I could do 3 hours sitting like this. So I humbly and sincerely apologize and hope you enjoy the rerun of the show from this past Thursday. Until then, take care, and God willing, the crick don't rise. I'll be live as I can be tomorrow night. Okay? Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! 5th day of June, 2008. Almost done with the week. Hope you'll join in for a lot of cussing and discussing this evening. Any issue is more than welcome via the phone lines here. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. That is, of course, toll free. If you'd like to save us a nickel or a buck and dial in on yours, 304-658-3333. I had a bunch of phone calls I didn't get to last night, and I want to personally apologize to those whom I didn't reach. I know it happens a lot on terrestrial broadcasts, but I really, really try not to let it happen here. So, my apologies. If you've got thoughts you want to share, you can go ahead and bring them to the table this evening. And I heartily welcome you to do so. Wonderful show by Mark Levine there in the last hour. I guess a lot of people, I would hope that Jewish Americans are put at ease by Obama's remarks to AIPAC, because frankly, the issues are solidly it's abundantly clear now that what Obama says is true. George Bush did make Israel less secure and not more secure. And of course, before the Iraq War, a lot of us were hollering that. We were hollering that it was going to be a nightmare for the entire Middle East, which it has, of course, turned out to be. But I, with the issues that I focus upon, I hope you will forgive me when I say that my little ears perked up when he started talking about missiles raining down on little Israeli children. Because, of course, that is an unspeakable horror, and it is something that both sides are equally good at, and that is making the innocents pay for the sins of the adults. Israel sends rockets into apartment buildings and blows little Palestinian children into millions of pieces. Palestinian people send rockets, unguided rockets. They're not missiles. They are unguided rockets. Once they go up, they don't know where they come down, and that shows a grave, gross indifference to human life. And it kills civilians, kills children, mothers, babies in the womb. Both sides have enough blood on their hands to last a lifetime, a generation. I understand that Israel tries its best to avoid civilian casualties, but Israel doesn't avoid civilian casualties. They kill babies too, Mark. You just have to come to terms with that. And it is equally reprehensible. I will not excuse anyone, and I won't excuse child killers, whether they're Israelis or whether they are Palestinians, Arabs, Hindus, Sikhs, Kurds, Armenians, Turks, none of them. The slaughter of children is wicked and evil and condemned by the religious holy books of virtually any faith. That having been said, God knows, the United States has enough blood to go around. Lord God, how many babies in the womb have we slaughtered with our Tomahawk cruise missiles and our smart bombs and our laser-guided munitions? Brought to you by Raytheon. How many? How do we answer for it? But in the midst of Obama's remarks about the killing of children, well, you know where my heart lies. I'm a hillbilly. I'm an Appalachian. I'm an Appalachian American. And yeah, I think we deserve the hyphen between the two, because Appalachian Americans are just a little bit less than American. Because it's okay to make war on us. It's okay for suburban soccer moms to make war on us. Leaving the lights on. Leaving the computers running overnight. buying the extra refrigerator or the extra freezer. That's war on Appalachian Americans. And so I'm inclined, and I think over the weekend I'm going to work on an essay directed at Senator Obama. And I'm going to use Senator Obama's words regarding Israeli children. And I'm going to ask him why he doesn't have the same level of compassion for little hillbilly children. More explosives go off around little hillbilly children every day than go off anywhere in Israel. More explosives go off around little hillbilly children every day than go off anywhere in Iraq. Little hillbilly children go to school with 2.8 billion gallons of toxic sludge held by nothing more than a dirt dam hanging over their heads. Little hillbilly children go to school in a place where they literally breathe poison every day. Senator Obama talked about his little helicopter ride in Israel. When I get done with this essay, there will be speaking completely ex cathedra and without the approval of anyone sought in advance, I will invite Senator Obama to come to West Virginia and fly over the Appalachian war zone. Fly over Kaford Mountain, Senator Obama. And then maybe you can make a speech here in your own country about your own fellow countrymen and exhibit the same compassion to little Appalachian children that you exhibited to people who are not even your own countrymen. At the end of the day, that's the question. Do Appalachian children deserve the same compassion that we reserve for children in other countries? Do they? It's a simple question. And it's a question that I damned well want an answer to. In excess of 70% of people living in Appalachia oppose mountaintop removal. When do we get the hope and change here in Appalachia? Now, I know. You live on the West Coast, you live up east, you live down south, and you're probably a little tired of old Bob beating on the damned Appalachian thing all the time. Well, I'm sorry. But I'm not going to give up, and I'm not going to stop. Because you know what? My children are just as American as a kid in Georgia or New York or New Jersey or Washington or California or Illinois or Missouri. My children deserve the same chance that any other child anywhere else in this country deserves. And I gotta say that it went off in me like gunpowder when I realized that Senator Obama was displaying more compassion for children who weren't even his own fellow countrymen than he does for people in Appalachia. The time for wishy-washiness is at an end. I am going to support Barack Obama all the way to November. I will do everything in my power to see him elected President of the United States. But if it is within my power, I will see him take the oath of office, and I will see him enter into the White House of the United States with full knowledge that there are children in this country who are treated as something less than citizens. And that while the world does need a solution to the slaughter of Palestinian and Israeli children, the United States needs a solution to the killing of Appalachian children. When a child dies, it little matters whether or not the cause of death is an American-made missile on an American-made helicopter sold to Israel or a rocket built in a basement somewhere in Gaza, or whether the cause of death is slow poison inflicted upon American children, all in the name of nothing more than holy profit. That's the holy profit, not the holy prophet. So I guess I've got some writing in front of me. And that really wasn't going to be the thrust and the focus of the program this evening, although I kind of had to get that off my chest. And I'm not, Mark, I'm not flinging the slings and arrows at Israeli or Palestinian children. I'm just saying that Appalachian children deserve the same level of regard and compassion. And I don't see how anyone could disagree with that. How does it happen? How are the Appalachian children killed? They're squashed, Mark. They're squashed like bugs by overloaded coal trucks that howl down two-lane roads and run their mamas and daddies off into the ditch or just run over them. Yeah, that's how it happens. Little Appalachian children are killed by drinking poisoned water from poisoned wells. And their kidneys burn up. And they blow up when they die. They blow up to about three times their normal size, and their heads look like little volleyballs when their kidneys fail from the heavy metals and the poisons that the mountaintop removal industry puts into their drinking water. That's how they die. It's a horrible death. They die of asthma. They suffer IQ deficits from the mercury that coal puts into the air and the water. They suck the mercury literally from their mother's breasts. And they die of long-term diseases. They may not be children anymore when they die, but they die just the same. And the proximate causation is there from point A to point B. They die of neglect. They die of intentional acts. Anyone who's ever had a bad cold and found themselves gasping for breath has just a tiny little peephole into the hell of children in Appalachia who suffer from asthma from the moment that they leave their mother's wombs. Cancers, heart disease. And those are American children. American children. Appalachian American children. But again, that's not where I wanted to start this evening. Not at all. There are 100 other places to go this evening. Oh, let's see. But just to stay on topic, in case you were wondering, you know who Daniel Pipes is, right? Daniel Pipes is this Islamophobic freak that is a darling of the hard right. Let's see, in the past he's written things like Muslims smell funny. Sort of reminds me of stories I've read of the Holocaust, where little good German children would sit in the front of the classroom and say, "Teacher, move me, I smell a Jew." Daniel Pipes says Muslims smell funny. Well, Daniel Pipes, despite all of that kind of hate, has the high regard of the right wing, and people go to him and say, Mr. Pipes, what do you think? And then he opens his mouth and bats fly out. And then, oh, well, okay, he's an expert. So he has issued his latest pronouncement in an interview posted at the right-wing smear filth machine, the National Review Online. And he's calling upon the United States and its allies to tell Tehran to, his words, watch out for an American attack. Here's the quote. What I suspect will be the case is, oh, Jesus, you know, I wanted to put rocks through windows when I heard this kind of crap flowing out of Cheney's mouth in October of 2004. Do you remember when he said, if John Kerry gets elected, the terrorists will probably immediately attack us. Remember that? I remember that, son of a bitch. And what Daniel Pipes said is, what I suspect will be the case should the Democratic nominee win in November, President Bush will do something. And should it be Mr. McCain that wins, he'll punt and let McCain decide what to do. And then, not content with that sort of sick fear-mongering, he piled on a little bit. Look, if you don't want an American attack, then you have to join us in being very serious with the Iranians and making clear to them we will attack if they don't stop. This is what he wants Russia and China to do. That's disgusting. The Think Progress reports that the Israeli newspaper Yediot Achronot, God only knows what I'm doing to those words, best I can do, okay, has reported that Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert planned to encourage Bush to prepare an attack against Iran during his meeting with the president yesterday. The sad thing is, I can find some of what this freak says believable. Because what's past is prologue, as Shakespeare said. And if you recall, it was once he knew that he would not be getting a second term that Pappy Bush decided to have a little military intervention in Somalia. Now, didn't he? Sent American troops, under-equipped, under-prepared, into Somalia on a so-called humanitarian mission, knowing that he was going to dump it in the lap of one Bill Clinton and leave it for him to clean up. Right? I mean, not making this stuff up. This happened. And we know by virtue of the fact that these punks and these thugs and these common street creatures of the Bush administration don't have a lot of creativity. They're using the same arguments for Iran that they used for Iraq, the same made-up, bogus BS, and hoping that we'll buy it twice. Oh, that's not just my opinion. No, there's a report out today. But I can believe it. Because they're not creative, and that, you know, why, if it ain't broke, why don't fix it? Just like his daddy, you can imagine it. You can imagine that hateful, jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout sitting in the White House saying, I'll fix him. I'll give him a war he won't get out of for 1,000 years. Yeah, let him fly, boys. And leave the mess to Obama to sort out. That is the kind of criminal thuggery that we deal with when we talk about Republicans and so-called conservatives. Disgusting.
Jessica Simpson looks really cold in her wet white t-shirt.
Might be just out there saying it. I'm not looking at the full. He's got his signature Muslim smell funny remark in there as well. Yeah, this is the guy who was nominated by the Bush administration to head the Institute of Peace. Oh, Margaret. But yeah, the cat's out of the bag as of today. The Senate Intelligence Committee said today via a long-awaited report that George Bush and the whole filthy little crowd, not once, not twice, but numerous times, exaggerated, that's the word, exaggerated, what they knew about the threat from Iraqi nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons as they determined to launch this nation into a war it could ill afford. The quote from the report? Well, the quote actually from my Senator John D. Rockefeller, J. Rockefeller. In making the case for war, the administration repeatedly presented intelligence as fact when it was unsubstantiated, contradicted, or even non-existent. Jumpin' Jehoshaphat, I may have to just turn the mic off and pound my head on the table for a little bit. Would somebody please copy Nancy Pelosi in on this little report? Would somebody please let Nancy, because, see, when the high-toned silk stocking, Savile Row bespoke suit-wearing Washington crowd says that George Bush exaggerated, what that means in the language that you and me and the rest of Beans and Cornbread America use is that he lied! He's a lying bastard! And there are more than 4,000 American service members lying in the cold, moldy earth because he lied. And yes, innocent children in a far-off foreign land have been blown into their constituent pieces because they lied. Because they ached for war. Because they yearned for the bloodshed. Because they yearned for what they perceived would be the power that they would gain. They lied! And yes, it conveniently rhymes, and others died. Not tens of others, not dozens of others, not hundreds of others, not thousands of others, not tens of thousands of others, not even hundreds of thousands of others, but over 1 million have died. Because President Bush and his top aides repeatedly exaggerated what they knew about. That's called lying. I don't know, fold the thing up into a little paper airplane and just kind of fly it over the transom into Nancy Pelosi's office. Right on it, is impeachment still off the table, lady? Sorry, it just pisses me off. Now, what's the Republican answer to this? Well, that dirty little pig, Christopher S. Bond, Mo. Said, well, the Democrats who ran for the presidential nomination this year, they said publicly that Iraq had weapons that were a threat to the United States. They did too! Yes, Senator Clinton did. It cost her the nomination for the presidency of the United States. With a lot of people. Other Democrats did too. To what I consider to be their eternal shame. See, the new report is important, long in coming though it may be. The new report is important because the previous Senate report that was issued back when the Pig Lickens still controlled the Senate. It blamed everything on the intelligence community. Oh, well, you know, they botched the task of assessing Iraq's WMD capability. But now, the a little o-slay on the uptake, a members of the Democratic-controlled Senate Intelligence Committee have finally figured out what so very many of us knew for so very long, and that is, it wasn't all the intelligence community's fault. Even where there was especially where there was contradictory evidence, the Bush administration simply stuck its little fingers in its little ears and said, la, 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 I don't want to hear that he doesn't have any weapons of mass destruction. La, 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 la. Don't tell me that he doesn't have any chemical weapons program. La, 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 la. And exaggerated the threat. Yes, 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 exaggerated. You know, I guess that's kind of like, I mean, you know, if you think back to the 90s, when Bill Clinton bit his lower lip and held his knuckle out to us and said, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. What he was doing was exaggerating. No, he didn't have coitus with Monica Lewinsky. He had, you know, guys. I mean, I don't have to get graphic. But no, they didn't get down on the carpet of the Oval Office and do the hokey pokey. No. It was an exaggeration. And he got impeached for it. Nancy Pelosi says that, on the other hand, doing the same thing, but only leading to the deaths of, you know, a million or so individuals, you know, 1/6 of the Holocaust, that, bad! The impeachment's off the table. Screw her with a red-hot poker, you know? Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome. Hey, Susan!
I knew it. All I had to have access to was a history book. Three words. Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, I know. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Thank you, George Santayana.
Yep. Got another little piece of news. I don't know if you saw it. It's an AP report. The police in D.C. are going to establish, you're going to love this, checkpoints in the D.C. neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Checkpoints.
Your papers are not in order.
What is it, Baghdad?
Baghdad on the Potomac? Sure, why not? Works over there. It's working real good. Just ask Joe Lieberman and John McCain. It's all peaceful in the green zone.
Oh,
we're going to make ourselves a little D.C. green zones. Of course, you know, I'm guessing, call me crazy, white folks aren't going to be asked that many questions.
No.
You know, it's going, what you doing here? You know.
Supposedly, the officers, and this is a quote, will check driver's ID and turn away any who don't have a legitimate purpose in the area.
What the hell's a legitimate purpose in the area? I mean, I'm going,
I'm visiting my girlfriend and I want to get laid. Yeah, I could see somebody saying that. Or my drug dealer lives here. Give me a break. Sure.
I know. Yeah. What's your purpose in being here? Score deal.
You know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's legitimate. Go ahead. Lots of crack dealers in there.
Or even, my friend lives here.
Right. How about my ex-wife and my children live here?
Yeah, they don't have the right to ask those kind of questions. This is not Baghdad.
Well, it's not Baghdad, but you know what? Under the Supreme Court, the rulings that have come down in the last few years, they do have those rights to ask that kind of a question. Because, you know, the Supreme Court said a few years ago, and we just don't pay a hell of a lot of attention to it, that a cop can stop you on the street and say, I want to see your driver's license. I want to see your ID. I want to see some proof of identity. You're not under suspicion of anything. You haven't been charged with anything. You're just minding your own business. Citizen, I want to see your identification. And you know what? In America, you don't have the right to say no anymore.
Mm-hmm. Screw the Supreme Court.
Well, but, you know, it's the law of the land. That's what you get with activist conservative judges.
What is that quote? The law's an ass.
Yeah, I know. And what do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 38? Your Honor. You know, but
no, the one with the IQ of 38 is Chief Justice Roberts.
Yeah, right. Well, that's an old lawyer joke. You know, what do you call a bus full of lawyers going over a cliff with one empty seat? Damn shame.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a dead skunk in the middle of the road and a dead lawyer in the middle of the road? Skid marks in front of the skunk.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know them all.
I've heard a lot of them.
I know them all.
Well, you shouldn't have studied law. That was your problem.
No, I know. Duff.
Bad
for you.
You know, the trickle-down thing, theory of economics doesn't work with beans, but the trickle-down theory of fascism works really well.
Oh, it really doesn't trickle. It flows like a mighty river.
Yeah, like sewage.
Yeah, I didn't say it wasn't. Yeah, well, I read some quote the other day. I just loved it. It said it was some Murphy's Law kind of thing. If you add a spoonful of wine to a barrel of sewage, you get sewage. If you add a spoonful of sewage to a barrel of wine, you get sewage.
Yeah.
Kind of struck. I'm an impressionable person, and that struck me as worth remembering.
Yeah, that's exactly what the whole concept of this whole fascism thing does. It just poisons everything it touches.
Yeah, and one bad apple does spoil the barrel. And what we've got here is a barrel of bad apples.
Oh, yeah. Ain't that the truth? Got a whole town full of them. It's called Washington, D.C.
Well, we got a significant portion of the entire population. They're called Repig Lickens.
Yeah, that's true. Did you see did you check out that link I sent you about McCreevy?
I tried to open it. It didn't go anywhere. It 404'd me. Page not found.
Okay, I will send you I put it up. I'm going to put it up on Syntax. So I'll put it, I'll do it there too. But in effect, what he did was, McCreevy, that's my term for McCain, is saying he's not Bush's third term, but yeah, he's going to spy on Americans.
Yeah, I did see that story that he would spy on us if we needed a good spying.
Don't you just feel?
It warms the cockles of my heart, Susan. It truly does. And I was sitting here last night getting the rerun stream going when Joe Vecchio called in. Joe calls in from time to time just to let us know he's still on the planet, and I appreciate it because I love talking with Joe. He said he's convinced that John McCain is to American politics what the cranky old guy on the porch is who's saying, "Hey, you kids, get off my lawn."
You've been listening to Stephanie Miller.
No, I haven't, but maybe Joe has. But Joe's that quick. He may have come up with that a long time ago. But now he says the American press will get up on the porch with it. Yeah, get off his lawn!
Yeah, that's the truth. I don't know if you know it, but this will also help other people. For the people who have broadband connections but who do not have cable and would like to see Countdown, you can now download it and watch it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Just check out the website, Countdown's website, and there's a place where you can get it through iTunes, or you can download it in WMV format.
Are they charging for it, or?
No, it's free.
Oh, really?
And it's the whole program.
Is it after the fact, or can you watch it live?
No, it's after the fact, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, no biggie. But still, that's that's.
And you can do that apparently with all of the political talk things.
I enjoyed something the other day while I was sort of recuperating. Had the laptop with the wireless connection in the bedroom there, and got a link from a buddy of mine to Jon Stewart interviewing Scott McClellan, that episode. And, of course, the great line was, dude, you talked about Fight Club. But beyond that, they also had Fred Schneider of the B-52s on. And Fred Schneider read excerpts of Scotty's book.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
In B-52 fashion. Oh, it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. Got to bring in the pros. Well, look, I'm going forward full, but you know, long before a lot of other people said it, I said that McCain is the problem and McCain is my focus.
Yeah. Well, you know, that speech he did on the night that Barack Obama clinched the nomination, the reason I call McCain the creepy is that smile he kept coming up with when he made that horrible speech. It was just the creepiest creeper smile I have ever seen him laugh.
Oh yeah, that was a Thor. That was a Thorazine. That was a Thorazine grin, Susan.
Oh yeah, I mean just you.
And what's more, I'm sure others have pointed it out, but it doesn't hurt to repeat it. He made the speech in Kenner, Louisiana, and said, "Here we are in New Orleans."
Yeah.
Well, only somebody who doesn't know anything about New Orleans would think that Kenner is New Orleans. I mean, it's even got Metairie in between. The biggest claim to fame is that right after he got out of prison or lost an election or whatever, David Duke went straight to Kenner to deliver his speech.
Right, we're in heaven. And did you get a look at that crowd?
More than I cared to.
I mean, it was just,
Yeah.
There was of the crowd, I should say. And then it cut, you know, they cut from him to Hillary and then to Barack. And, you know, the contrast between McCreepy and Barack is just mind-boggling.
Yes. Obviously, Barack Obama's was the highlight of the night. And, frankly, those two. I want to heal the party. I truly do. I understand. See, I'm one of the few people, since I am the only Southern, liberal talker going, who understands, apparently, why Southern folks were so happy, Appalachian folks, whatever, the Pennsylvanians, Ohioans were so happy to vote for. They got a long and happy and healthy relationship with Bill.
Yeah.
And I didn't find that difficult to understand. And I don't think it's going to be impossible for Barack Obama to speak to those people. Now, there
he's got to be willing to go out there and campaign.
Well, absolutely he does, and I think it's fair, and I think it's fair to ask him tough questions.
Yeah.
I want to know. I honest to God want to know why Appalachian children don't deserve the same solicitous words as others. Now, I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm going to vote for him in November. But
yes, so am I. When you get your essay done, can I put it up on SendTab?
Oh, sure. Sure, we'll put it.
We'll also put it up on the Obama website. I have a blog up there too.
Yeah, more than happy for you to.
In his face as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I will keep hammering at it.
I don't think there's any. I think we need to, because I think he'll get more people, bring more people to his side than he'll push away. By proving himself a friend to Appalachia as opposed to a friend of coal. Yeah, maybe it's just me, but when you've got 70-80% of West Virginians saying they oppose mountaintop removal. I'm guessing that's the side you want to be on. Especially now that we're sending most of it to China, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Where did you see that survey?
Oh, it's a couple or 3 years old. I mean, it's been out there for a while. It was done here in West Virginia. It was either 70 or 80%, and that's back when the anti-mountaintop removal movement wasn't even in full swing. That's why the coal companies had to pay buku bajillion dollars to have computer-generated bugs in commercials flying around little phony courtrooms saying that life is good out on the strip site. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Susan, I'm going to roll along, dear.
Okay. Love to Agnes, and have a nice night.
Going to try. Hey to Donald. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I am going right back to the phones for a minute. But I'm very serious and I'm very sincere when I say that I want to have healing in the party. I don't have anything against anybody for voting for or supporting Hillary. You can't get around this. I mean, the statistics are what the statistics are. You can't get around it. And there are some people who are not going to vote for Barack Obama, and they are beyond the pale and unreachable. You've probably already heard this or seen this before, but I offer you Harriet Christian. She showed up for the Rules Committee meeting and flew to the microphones and promptly lost her mind. But she was a Clinton supporter from New York, and this is where a lot of the political two-year-olds are going right now.
An older American woman.
Where are you from?
New York City. Hillary State. The best nominee that's possible. And the Democrats are throwing the election away. For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman that was running for president. And I'm not going to shut my mouth anymore. I can be called white. But you can't be called black. That's not my America. It's equality for all of us. That's it's about right. Time we all stood up for it.
Right.
I'm no second-class citizen.
Right. We're not
goddamn the Democrats.
Where are you from?
You want more? Well, she goes on to declare that John McCain will be the next president of the United States. Thanks for our good buddy Jurassic Pork. Over at welcometopottersville.blogspot.com for putting that up there for us to see. There's some people we're not going to reach. And that woman may run out and vote joyfully for John McCain because she thinks she won't be a second-class citizen anymore. Where she got the notion that she's a second-class citizen, I'll never know. She's a white woman from Manhattan. I mean, come on. You know what I mean? But God Almighty, what's that line?
Proud to be an older American woman.
Where are you from?
New York City, Hillary State, the best nominee that's possible, and the Democrats are throwing the election away.
Why are they throwing the election away, Harriet?
For what? An inadequate black male.
Hey. Let's go to the phones before I, you know, bust a gut or something. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Albert.
What was that? You know, do I sound like that lady? I hope not. I mean, I do have roots in New York. I hope I don't sound like that.
Well, I mean, you know, you don't have the whole Wisconsin accent thing going on there, Albert. Hey, dear, hey.
That's good. That's good, too. I'd rather be neutral, I guess, with a hint of something. Anyway, what is she talking about? What is that? What's wrong with that lady?
She's insane.
She got too much money. That's what her problem is.
But it's not isolated. I'm not going to mention the website, but there's a website out there today that has a Democrats for McCain sign on it, and it's somebody that I thought was a friend of the program, and
that's special. Isn't that special? I heard that today on Talk of the Nation. You know, I heard these old ladies calling up talking about Hillary or McCain because McCain has the experience, and oh man, you know, things like that almost make me long for a change through the Constitution. Meaning, like, you know how usually a presidential, you know, candidate or, you know, a president will have echoing ramifications over the next few generations. You know what I'm saying? So we got to stop. I hate to say, you know, I hate to be a geriatric, you know, phobic, what have you. But I think maybe, you know, when you hit 60 or what, you know, 65 or 70, that's how you're done. Because you live in this hyper world of, you know, a world of with nostalgic for an age that didn't exist. You want nostalgia for the 50s, and they want to bring this kind of stuff back. And, you know, it's like that world can't exist anymore. You know, that world never did exist. And, you know.
Yeah, the, yeah, it's all encapsulated in the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, the Leave It to Beaver theme, and that's all there was of it.
And, you know.
Yeah, Ward, I think you were a little hard on the Beaver last night. Yeah. Ah!
It's just, well, you know, I heard Lieberman talking about how he's railing against Obama because Obama's talking about how, you know, we should talk to Iran, you know, and how Iran is not the Soviet Empire. And then, you know, Lieberman goes off on this tangent about how much worse it is. And it's like, wait a minute. Were you alive during this period of time? I mean, I wasn't. You know, that was at the tail end, you know, Red Dawn and Rambo and stuff like that.
Oh, but don't make me think of that movie. Wolverines! Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you know, so that's the age of the Cold War that I grew up in.
Yeah, that was when we got invaded by the Cubans, wasn't it? Or was it the Angolans?
The Mexicans, I think.
Hey, Jesus.
The Mexicans and the Cubans and the Russians and all the Reds, you know. But I sit there and I'm listening to him talk about this, and, I mean, the 50s, we're talking about Iran with no nuclear device, so to speak of. And even if they had as we talked about, you know, a big boy or a Hiroshima, you know, one of those. If they had it, which is one that anybody could build in over a weekend. You know, but even if they had one, what are they going to do with it? That's nothing. I mean, Russia is over here, you know, the real threat during that time period versus Russia. They're sitting there with blowing off a 50-megaton warhead. A 50-megaton warhead.
For giggles.
I mean, just, and it was 100, and they scaled it down. And, you know, that's just one of these things that it's almost impossible to wrap your head around how massive something like that is. But, you know, real quick, I do talk too much, and I know that, and I should have shut up.
No, you're doing fine.
No, I mean, the last phone call we had, the last time we chatted, you're trying to get out the information. I'm glad you didn't. You're trying to get the information out on those prison ships. And then saying the names of the prison ships, the Bataan, what else? The Malmedy, what else did they call it? The Auschwitz? What are these ships called? What kind of universe is this? I had to calm down, Bob. I had to calm down for a day before I could call you and not curse my head off. What kind of universe does someone name a prison ship that?
Well, it's like a helicopter assault carrier. You know, those little, like, mini carriers that are all helicopters?
LHS, yeah, it's a Marine.
Yeah. Well, the modern namesake of my father's carrier, the Essex, is now an LHS. And that's what these things are. The Bataan is an LHS, I do believe, and so is the Peleliu. And when the Japanese did it, we called them hell ships.
That's what I'm saying. Well, there has to be an Auschwitz out there. If there's hundreds of them, there's got to be at least one that's Breckenau or one of those.
USS Bergen-Belsen?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The USS Nanking, how about that too? I mean, why don't just name them all? And then do that same, I mean, just, Bob, that's a tough one. That's a real tough one to just.
Well, you know, I know you've got a, you know, you're a vet, you man. You were a Navy guy, and I know what it would have done to my poor father. Military people have a certain reverence for their service, and so do I. And to turn around and spit on it, because that's what that does. You see, you know, because this wasn't under the operation and control of the United States Navy, Albert. This was the CIA operating the prison torture facilities in the bowels of a United States Navy vessel. And I can't imagine how I would feel if I was a member of the U.S. Navy. Jesus God!
Your gut would hurt. You'd have a really hollow bubble in there, and it would just twist. And it's not even so much, you know, the Navy angle, Schmavy angle, you know, make them all into razor blades for all I care. What I'm talking about here is just the human, like, consciousness aspect of it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We're talking about war crimes, committing war crimes, and it's like...
We executed the Japanese general from Bataan for negligently ignoring similar conduct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, I don't care what the right wingers say. Those are just facts.
Yeah.
It's like when Crisco John Ashcroft got confronted with facts in Galesburg, Illinois at Knox College. You know, when that young woman asked him whether or not she thought that the Japanese guy who was executed, who engaged in waterboarding, was unfairly convicted.
Yeah.
And he had to dance around and say, well, no, see, it doesn't say waterboarding. Read that again. It says water treatment. See, there's a difference. And here we are 4 weeks later, and we got testimony in front of the Congress that, yeah, we got something we call the water treatment, too. Where they fill you up with water and punch you in the gut to make you aspirate it and drown and think you're drowning.
And you know, I'll tell you right now, if you want to replicate what just not, you know, I don't recommend anybody replicate water treatment, but just waterboard yourself next time you're in the shower. Get your washcloth, put it over your face, just let it drape down and put your face under the water and try to breathe. That's not gonna be an experiment that you're gonna wanna do for more than 5 seconds.
Albert, I took my kids to the swimming pool last summer and just playfully dunked my youngest, and she didn't speak to me for 3 days.
Yeah. And you add that fabric to the mix, and it's even worse. It just is. I don't know, it just turns close. I'm not a claustrophobic person. I can climb into air ducts and do things like that, and I don't mind, you know, tubes and all kinds of stuff like that. But that, it brings out a sense of claustrophobia that, you know, and not only that, and then you can't breathe. It's totally in your brain, but that's where all the best science fiction movies torture the villains, or the villains torture the hero. It's always in the mind. You know, it's always something that, you know, like all of a sudden at the end of the movie, the person wakes up and they're gibbering in a cell. And the whole movie was just, you know, a whole psychological fabrication. And that's room, what is it? One
yeah, and Patrick room. Duffy gets out of the shower. Right, yeah.
But that's, you know, I mean,
But there's no wake-up on this one, Albert.
No, well, we have the wake-up on this one. That's what it is. And that's why, you know, when we elect Barack Hussein Obama... We're just going to need to ride this. We're going to have to ride. I mean, hopefully, now he's. I think the thing that I think that's good about it, and the world kind of wants him to be president for, and the world, mind you, not just, you know. I mean, if the world was voting for president of America, Barack Hussein Obama would win right now. He would win immediately. Now I know a lot of people get all egocentric, and you know they love their hubris so much, so they don't, you know, they get all offended at that aspect. Like, oh, who's the rest of the world? Why do we care what the rest of the world thinks? You see, and when I see that as being, we're the weakest link in the species. That this mindset that a lot of Americans share about how we can do whatever we want, you know, who cares what anybody else thinks, you know, everybody else needs to be subordinate to us, that kind of mindset is like the pinnacle of what's going to make this species extinct. Like I was talking about the bees, and like I was talking about this, and this stuff all boils into that. And I think that people, when they see Barack Obama, you know, and they see the fact that he's a little younger, you know, he's been around, you know, he's smoked cigarettes and done some drugs, and, you know, maybe his mind is opened up a little bit, that he will listen when people say, hey, you know, like, for example, you say to George Bush, George Bush, we have solar panels. Hey, and they'll give you some, you know, weaselly little thing that just, and then clean coal. You know, but if you say that to Barack Obama, if you say, listen, we need solar panels, like now, he might say, wait, you know, you're right. Or he'll at least think about it for 2 seconds. he'll be open to that idea.
Hey, getting the 2 seconds is more than we've had in 8 years.
That's exactly right. And we just need some air. You know, we need to take the washcloth off our face and pull our face from the shower. You know, this is, I mean, that's what we need to be doing. We need immediately take a breath of air because that's what we need. And I think that's what, you know, people talk about, oh, he's not giving us any policy. He's not doing that. You know, he's talking about hope. So fill in the blank. You know, what is hope? What does hope mean to you?
Well, you know, I didn't hear him running Wednesday. I don't, not that I've read it all or anything, but I don't see any, I haven't seen like the day after coverage from the London Times or whatever that came out after Churchill said, what did he say? All I have to offer you is blood, toil, sweat, and tears. And, but, you know, the next day, they went, oh, well, you know, Churchill big downer, you know, in big 15-point, you know, bold headline. No. Sometimes you talk in abstractions. And sometimes it's blood, sweat, toil, and tears. And sometimes you got to look at people and say, listen, it's awful. It's going to get better. I'm going to make it better. You know, because we have become a people who, for some reason or another, look to our elected representatives for reasons that I don't fully comprehend to make it better. You know, when you got little ones, when they bang their little finger on the door facing or whatever, and they come up, what do? You don't take them to the emergency room. You kiss the boo-boo and tell them it's going to be better.
That's right.
And 9 times out of 10, that's enough.
I'm around 6, but my kids are dramatic. So.
Well, okay. Well, so are mine, but I was, you know. Look, I'm trying to be hopeful here, all right? I mean.
Well, no, you're exactly right. I mean, you know. What policies do you think we're going to need in terms of what does hope mean? Does hope mean sucking coal, ripping down, you know, our environment and destroying our world?
You know what? Hope to me means a higher infusion of federal funding into college grant programs.
Exactly. Expanding the small business grants. You know, putting people to work with, you know, renewable energy.
Green-collar jobs. I love that phrase, green-collar jobs.
Green-collar. Yeah, I like that phrase, too.
Yeah. Hope means being willing to sign and actively pushing for something like the Employees' Free Choice Act, where people in workplaces who want to be in unions can be in unions without being browbeaten by their damned employer. That's hope.
Right. Hope is something that will filter, that will actually trickle down into our lives and directly influence us. Not a stimulus check for $1,300 that, you know, oh, for the court, for the month of May, sales are up. Wow, big shocker. A big shocker. People got more money than they need to buy gas. People are selling their old jewelry for gasoline. You know, so come on now. Hope is transcendent to anything that these bastards have done for the past 20 years, even maybe longer. You know, we don't have to get that far. We're just talking now. You know, and you sit there and try, there ain't no rationalizations from McCain, man. He ain't going to get nothing. I can't even see that guy getting 30% of the vote. I just can't.
Well, but see, that's where I go off down the other fork in the road. I can. Now, I don't know what's going to happen to the political two-year-olds out there, the people that use it. I've been a Democrat for 30 years, but no more.
Yeah, they wake up. I think it's going to be glaringly obvious during the election cycle, during the campaigning. Barack is going to annihilate him in all debates. I mean, if you sit there and you put them side by side.
Yeah, but Al Gore mopped the floor with George Bush.
Nah, it's totally different. It's like a Nixon in 81.
You know, what John Kerry did to George Bush wasn't even fair. I mean, it was a rat killing.
You know, it was through our eyes. You know, it was through the lens that we view our paradigm. It certainly was. It certainly was on every aspect of it. Now, granted, I didn't ever believe in my heart of heart that he was sincere. I didn't really buy Kerry's crap. I voted for him, but you know, I knew he was going to sit there and just fall down and spread eagle. I knew he was going to do that.
Hey, when you get 40, when you get $40 million for losing, you know, because he did. He walked away from Ohio with $40 million in his war chest. I may run again in 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Herman Munster. You know, go down in the basement with Grandpa for a while, okay?
I mean, come on. I mean, nah. So I'm not. I mean, when you put them two side by side, I mean, see, that's one of those things. You don't see that a lot. And, you know, I don't know if you talk, I don't know if you heard about what Obama and Lieberman's little encounter.
Yeah, I read about that, but there wasn't enough substance there for me to get my mind around.
True, but I could still see it. And you know what? Maybe it's just because I want to see it, because I want to see people like that suffer. And I mean, that doesn't make me as righteous as the Dalai Lama, but, you know, it's almost like, it's applauding when karma happens. Like when stupid idiots jump off their roof and hit their head and kill themselves, you just kind of have to say, you know, well, yay, you know, the gene pool's a little lighter, you know. The world, as Bill Hicks said, the world's lost a moron.
You know? I was thinking about Bill Hicks a few minutes ago when you were talking about the miracle of life. Kiss my butt, we're viruses with shoes.
And that's, you know, and that's a good point, though. But what kind? What kind of virus are we? We're a virus with shoes. And I think if you're going to really look at the macro of that with in terms of life, you know, because everything's all, everybody's the same in that respect. Everything. All species got similarities. And if you want to look at microbes, you know, like, here we are in a beaker, okay? We got X amount of glucose and this and that, and we've only got that much. Now, are we going to sit there and look up to the top of the beaker and go, hey, let's make some spores or wings or something and get out of this beaker? Because if we don't get out of here, hey, there's no guarantee out there, but if we don't get out of here or we don't start utilizing our resources wisely, pretty soon there'll be some dust in there. That's it. That's all it's going
to
be.
Well, I want to think that because the way it was described by, what was it, Roll Call or The Hill or whatever, where Obama pushes, he it was all gentle and gentlemanly, but he backed Lieberman up against the wall and had 3 minutes worth of words with him. I want it to be a lot more movie-like. I want him to grab Lieberman by the throat and slam him up against the wall and say, listen here, you little punk-ass bastard.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's one of the...
But then again, you remember the movie Patton, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you know how the narration's going? He says, in the days of the ancient Rome, you know, that wonderful George C. Scott voice, in the days of the ancient Roman Republic, a man would ride behind the triumphant general whispering in his ear. And all he said was, this is all fleeting, and you are mortal. Great, great moment. But you know what? I want somebody to walk behind Joe Lieberman now, whistling the Leave It to Beaver theme. You know, and it's time for Leave It to Lieber.
Yeah.
Because he's living in a place that doesn't exist.
Yes. I mean, it's like, well, man, you look at it. Look at Israel. Look at it. You know, and I know nobody ever likes to talk about it, but let's like just look at it objectively. And there ain't no religion. You and I are just ghosts or aliens that come onto this planet. We come and we look. And we see this region. We're always seeing bombs going off and shots being fired and this going down and everybody and these people walking through checkpoints and these people living in this green, fertile land and everybody else living in this brown, you know, with a wall around it. How long can you hold up a wall? You see, I wish they'd read their own Bible. You know, I wish they'd read and they'd learn these messages in their Bible. All they know is about us killing the, you know, the Gentile or fighting them or whatever. It's like, you know, what happened at Jericho? Eh? I mean, that's a, you know, but at the same time, what happens? And to me, that's a...
Deuteronomy chapter 25, kill everything that crawls, walks, breathes, lives. Kill them all.
Yeah.
No. I mean, if you take that stuff as history, the whole region is just steeped in blood. I mean, I'm surprised that when you put a spade in the earth, anywhere in that region, that it doesn't just, you know, shoot up geysers of human blood.
Yeah. It's a disgrace to humanity, you know. So, but
I mean, you got Romans flinging Jewish people over the walls at Masada. You got the Jewish Sicarii, cross dressers knifing legionaries in the street. You got the Assyrians, the Babylonians.
I mean,
it doesn't quit.
And that's 2,000 years ago. And you know, it's like we're talking about something that. I mean, the only reason you ever bring up Israel, what have you, is because it's symptomatic of the bigger picture. You know, it's like the bigger picture is the ones with power try to keep those that out of power out of power. You know, they try to keep the water, try to keep the oil, try to keep the this, try to keep the that. I mean, Bob, come on now. They keep airfield hangars full of diamonds, but they only trickle out a little bit. You know, and it's the same kind of deal with everything. They cheat, you know, they cut people's hands off for the mines. And, you know, I mean, they destroy your home. And they, you don't get none of it. You don't see none of it. You know, yeah, you got some electric power, and that's about the biggest difference between you and someone that lives near a diamond mine in Africa or, you know, one of these oil exporting regions. You know, that's about the only difference. You see a little bit of it. You see a little bit of it. But that's nothing. And, you know, they're sitting there keeping it all for themselves. And we're going to sit here and continue to let this. I mean,
look,
that's another thing that's nice about Barack. You know, yeah, I know he got an Ivy League education, and I know, you know, he's made some wise investments and this and that, and I'm not going to knock him for being successful.
Yeah, but once upon a time he sat down to dinner, and dinner was provided courtesy of food stamps, and that means something.
It does. Amen. Because I did, too. And, you know... I sit here and I listen to, I got this Republican guy that, thankfully everybody kind of don't even hang out with him anymore. But, you know, he used to hang around and he would say these things and he would be, you know, health insurance is affordable. You know, he's a single person. He's paying $100 a month. He thinks, you know, he's 23 years old, 25, whatever he is. And he thinks health insurance is affordable. And he joins the army and then he gets a big patriot. Anyway, la, 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 la. You know, these people come, and this kid actually happened to be adopted. And I'm like, I don't understand this disconnect with you. You're adopted, all right? Now, if the world was according to your philosophy, you would be like one of them dead children in China. Just throw you in the street because can't afford them, can't take care of you. Let the birds pick at you. I mean, and that's essentially what a lot of these people. That's how they are. And you know they sit there and they don't see the you know the hypocrisies and they don't see these things and you know it's because that's the letters they view the world from, you know. And I know there's some Hillary freaks out there. They're freaks, but they ain't the whole. And you know I'm certainly when I was upset with Hillary, it's because of her actions and her inactions and her stances and her policies. And, man, it would have been really tough
for me. I don't hate her for being Hillary. I don't hate her for having a vagina. I don't hate her. No, I don't hate her. I disagree with her.
Exactly.
You know, for me, you know, someone is, you know, first in her graduating class at Yale Law School, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that means something.
Yeah, it does.
And, you know, when she came here to West Virginia and sat down and somebody asked her about mountaintop removal, and she said, I don't know. Maybe we could put the mountains back together again after they're done being blown up. And I just slapped myself in the forehead and went, no, no. Because, see, she's been sitting on a committee since 2002 that deals with mountaintop removal. And
really?
She damn sure knows what mountaintop removal is. But, you know, she was trying to split the difference. Yeah. Well, it certainly is dangerous. But we sure need the coal. And maybe we can put the mountains back together again. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just went, oh, crap. You know, and, you know, I'm dramatic recreation. I'm doing that now. But, you know, I played the audio. I played the damned audio on the program, Albert, and everybody could hear it. And you know, that at the end of the day, that just, because, not so much because it displayed ignorance, but because it displayed a level of mendacity and duplicity. Because I know she knew better.
Yep. I mean, let's just come out and say it. I mean, if your kid did that to you and you said, hey, what happened to the front of the car? And they pulled that same game on you, what would that be? And that's why I didn't want her. That's what, because she's, you know, egregiously lying. She knows what she's, you know, she's speaking out of both sides of her mouth.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about, you know, it's like this this Senate report today. Good on Jay Rockefeller for finally getting it out there 4 years late. Or 2 years late at the very best. But, you know, good on him for getting it out there. But, you know, please, Jesus, can we stop with this squishy, soppy, soggy, cornflake length? He exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does the rest of America call it when you, you know, when you come home from fishing and you ain't got no fish in the creel and you say, I caught one this big, but a guy took it from me on the way home.
Mm.
What do we call that? It's not exaggerating. It's,
yeah.
Work with me here.
It's lying.
Lying. Yes, it is.
Lying.
You know, Bush lied. Damn it, Bush lied. And, you know, I don't, do we have to fold the report into a paper airplane and fly it over the transom of Nancy Pelosi's office? I don't know.
You know, and this is the whole deal. We do. It's called ballots, and we need to get rid of her. And who's voting? Was someone running against her, or is she in another 2 years?
She's got, no, she ran in 04. No, 06. 06 she ran. So she's in till 12.
No. Well, that's still better than John McCain and letting him fly on all his issues. You know, he is speaking of, he should have never been flying to begin with. What did he graduate?
894th out of 899.
Hoo-ah! There you go. Yeah, there you go. Oh, man.
You know,
oh,
I mean, this is, please, you know, the guy crashed a couple of planes. The guy, he bombed his own. He bombed his own aircraft carrier with the Forrestal.
Yep.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't a little American ack on the ground that brought him down over North Vietnam, and the guys on the Forrestal going, Jesus, finally got a break. You know, won't do it again. But his conduct in the Hanoi Hilton was disgraceful. Other people who were there said that he was given preferential treatment the whole time he was there after he dropped the dime on America and signed the confession. You know, he did. You know, he just did.
He's an opportunist. He's an opportunist, pure and simple.
And then he gets home, okay? He's 5 years in a POW camp, and his wife, his loving wife, mother of his children, I do believe,
mm-hmm.
waits patiently for him, prays for him every day, prays for his safe return. Dear Jesus, please send me my Johnny back.
Mm-hmm.
And within a year of returning home, she has a terrible car wreck, and it's debilitating. And he just happens to meet this beer heiress who looks a lot like her. And he says, sorry, hon. Love you and everything. But I'm out of here. But I mean, you know, we thought what Newt Gingrich did to his wife, you know, recovering from cancer, maybe gonna die, serves her the divorce paper. This is worse than that.
Yeah.
The guy is a sleaze merchant. He has no character. And frankly, for those, well, you know, we're Democrats. We don't want to do things like the Republicans do. You better, by God, be ready to. Because I don't know if you've seen all this stuff that's out there right now, but, you know, for off and on, the Clinton campaign promised that there was a tape of Michelle Obama calling people whitey. And the right-wing websites, it happened at the Trinity Church, and it was a couple of years ago, and there's video, we've heard of the video, the video's out there, I've heard about the video, and she says, whitey, several times. The whitey tape. It's like the Dead Baby Beatles album, you know, nobody's got a copy.
But, you know, wait.
But it's still out there. Newsmuck, World Nut Daily, all of that crap. The Obama Whitey tape will be out any day now. Rudy Giuliani had it. He just didn't get a chance to use it. It's out there. Oh, yeah. And, you know, maybe it is, and maybe they're saving it for October. But they've already tipped their hand by talking about it, and if they do, we know that it was saved for purely political, sleazy purposes. And even if it does, but even if it does exist, this whitey tape, Barack Obama wasn't even in the room. At what point in time do we stop holding people responsible for what other people say when you're not damn when you don't know they're saying it? I mean, you know, for Christ's sakes, Dick Cheney made a West Virginia incest joke, and I have yet to hear where anybody has called on John McCain to repudiate Dick Cheney. But under the laws that have been established by the for-profit media, Albert, he has to.
Mm-hmm.
He's responsible for what Dick Cheney says, because, you know, Barack Obama was responsible for what Jeremiah Wright said.
Oh, yeah. And he's responsible for what, you know...
And Hillary was responsible for what Geraldine Ferraro said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when does sauce for the gander become sauce for the goose? I'm just crazy that way, I guess.
Yeah? Well, you are a little crazy, but that's why we love you. I mean, you're right. All right. Well, when are they going to do this? Well, they're not. They're just not. It's going to be a double standard. You know, and it's like the whole thing is like, yeah, so what if she says? So what? So what if she calls them whitey? I call them whitey. And I call them cracker, and I'll call them honky. I think they're funny. I can use those terms, and so anybody else, it's the English language. And you want to sit there and, you know what does McCain call Vietnamese people?
Yeah, you don't want to know.
Yeah.
It ain't Vietnamese people.
I know there's a tape out there. I know there's probably like five of them. There's got to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What
does he call the wife that he ran off from the first wife with, for Christ's sakes?
Well, he has three wives, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, okay, the second wife. What does he call the third wife? I won't say that word, even though, you know, I don't have any limits on the words I can say here on the Internet. But I won't say that word because I have too much respect for women in general. And Agnes would kick my ass.
That's right.
called her that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And reporters have verified it. Mm. It's not a myth. It's real.
Yeah. But that's not shocking. It's not shocking.
These are...
You know, and this is the other thing. People keep calling Barack a black man. And he's not a black man. He's a mutt. He's white and black. And, you know, it's like, so you can sit there, I mean, in a way, just even calling him a black man, I see that, and that bothers me more than anybody calling me a cracko or somebody saying Negro or anything like that. Like, when it's subtle, the subtlety of it just coats my mouth, and that's the kind of stuff that disgusts me. Is this, you know, subtle garbage. This just, you know, this real quiet little, you know, just the fact that these, you know, the people are, I heard what the people in West Virginia said. I heard what they said. You know, they had no valid reasons for not voting for him. He's just one of those kind of people. And that, right then and there, that's what's ultra disturbing. Don't sit there, you know, hey, listen. People, they want to talk about vote for Hillary. They need to wake up. They need to, like, wake up and smother coffee. I mean, I don't even know. Some of these people are so fanatical. I don't even know if she tells them or votes for her. I mean, there's people that I wouldn't vote for her even if she was the VP. She needs to be president. Go Hillary. Like, they need to. These people need to wake up, Bob. Come on now.
Well, you know, Barack Obama is the nominee. Barack Obama gets to pick his vice president.
Mm-hmm.
If he chooses Hillary Clinton, that's who he chooses. If he doesn't, that's who he doesn't.
Yeah.
That's not my gig. And frankly, you know, I don't know of anybody, Albert, anywhere, who ever has cast a vote based upon the vice presidential nominee.
Exactly.
I mean, the loyal Bushies were going to vote for George Bush if he had renamed Dan Quayle.
Yep.
Okay. And frankly, the people who were going to vote for John Kerry were going to vote for John Kerry. Edwards made it a little bit more appealing. but they were going to vote for John Kerry anyway.
Exactly.
Dick Cheney was not the big draw on the Bush ticket.
Even if he had all the power, you know, he's still...
Right, but, you know, I mean, at that point in time, it wasn't quite... In 2000, it wasn't as abundantly clear that, you know, to the same extent that, you know, somebody's walking behind Lieberman whistling the Leave It to Lieber theme, that there was nobody walking behind Cheney whistling, you know, whistling the Imperial Death March from Star Wars. You know.
I don't know about that.
I mean, we knew he was nasty, but he rose to a whole new level of evil in the vice presidency. So
it's certainly been a historic 8 years, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, historic, but, hysteric,
you know, they will. I'm somewhat confident that, you know, once you see them. Now, see, I'm sure Barack Obama's called his wife or said that word in front of his wife, but, you know, they were doing things, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you're allowed. But with the venom...
This was after Cindy noted, you know, you're getting a little thin there on top, Johnny boy.
Yeah.
And his response was, well, at least I don't put my makeup on with a trowel, you...
Mm-hmm. And we know, and we all know what he's talking about, and, you know... If that's with people in the room, Lord help her when she gets in low with them.
Oh yeah, when it gets going real good, the fun words come out, because, you know, Navy flyboys aren't known for their altar boy vocabulary.
Yeah. He's, you know, and that's the thing. He's phonier than an $8 bill, and I think that's going to be, you know, hey. I might be wrong. Maybe Barack Obama is the Antichrist, you know.
No, I don't think so.
Right wing. Maybe, maybe. But you know what? So is John McCain. And you know what? I believe that. When you see these two people next to each other, man, we'll be. I know McCain's mom lived a long time, but come on now. You know, and I'm not trying to say, like, old people aren't smart and wise and this and that, you know. I'm not saying that. It certainly is. But you know what? All I'm trying to say to the elderly, like Mr. McCain, is that their dance is over. Their party's done. It's time for us. It's time for my kids, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Bless her little heart.
Yeah, I gotta go repair some damage somewhere.
Something. Yeah, some boo-boo needs kissed.
Something broken.
Yeah, I understand. Albert, always good to hear from you, brother.
It's always good to talk to you. You take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Love to Agnes.
Yeah, give the babies a big old kiss for me.
I will.
All right, see ya.
Okay, bye-bye.
Real people leading real people lives. God, I love what we get to do here. Some emails rolling in response to me beating the drum about mountaintop removal and what it does to Appalachia. Good for you, Bob. You can't quit. The children of Appalachia have nobody else to help. Anything I can do to help ring this bell, just say the word. You're doing a hell of a job, Bob, and we're certainly not tired of hearing the good fight. Yeah. Knock the slats out from under him. Thanks, Cindy. And, she goes on with regard to Harriet from Manhattan. No, I will not play the boy from New York City. I will not play the Manhattan Transfer. I won't do it. That Cindy also notes, well, from one old white woman to another, get a grip, old woman. Get a grip on your temper, on your mouth, and let the young people have their day. Tell her there are three old ladies for Obama for every single bigot like her. Obama's part white, too, you know, if his race is what's scaring you. Some people won't give up trying to control others. Hey, Harriet, retire already. Let the young people do the heavy lifting. Others have learned to leave that sack of crap on the ground and live a lighter life. That's just beautiful. Just beautiful. So, well, maybe we've gotten past that part of the program now. But, look, McCain is an incredibly flawed individual. And in my rational heart, in my rational mind, I cannot fathom the fact that people who were smart enough to comprehend the policies and the positions that Hillary Clinton were taking will not come around and understand that John McCain is pure effing poison. And I will hold them in lower regard if they don't than I hold Florida Nader voters. Okay? It's that simple. So, you know, sometimes all you got is hope. Sometimes that's all there is. Where else this evening? Daniel Pipes. Oh, you make me sick. Oh, well, in case you were wondering, the other theme that's sort of being finessed and worked a little bit. Remember a couple of weeks ago when William can't get my facts straight, but they're still paying me to be a columnist on the New York Times Crystal, said that after Obama's bitter remarks that Marx's famous statement about religion, it's a reiteration of that. And then Karl Rove chimed in on another show and said, "It's almost Marxian." And then, of course, then there was Leave It to Lieberman. It's Leave It to Lieberman. Brought to you by Genocide. When he was talking with Bingo Billy Bennett on the radio, and Lieberman said whether Obama is a Marxist was, well, that's a good question. Yeah, so it's no surprise that the Tom Bug Spray delay, you know, living proof of what huffing malathion will do to your brain, especially when you don't have much to work with in the first place, shows up on some right-wing sludge buckets program today. Never mind the setup. Just
there are reports of dissent within the Obama camp that they don't want to have Clinton on the ticket. Listen, if their pride gets in the way, because I'm with you, I think that they ought to recognize what she could do for them, mm-hmm. but if they reject her, I
Jesus, the right wing's still trying to salvage some way to run against Hillary. Damn it! We've spent 18 years building this industry! We were ready for her! And now you're not going to let her be your nominee? You let us pick, you let us pick John Kerry for you, why won't you let us pick Hillary too? Oh, she's got to be vice president. She's got to, you know, when the right wingers are telling us that Hillary has to be the vice president, you got to kind of go, no. But they're still out there. Oh, please give let us run against her nationally for something. Please. I mean, we poured all these millions and billions of dollars into hating her and talking about, you know, her killing Vince Foster. And God knows how many rounds of ammunition poor Dan Burton's run through his pistol in Indiana shooting watermelons to prove that she blew Vince away. Oh, God, please. We got to run against her. Please. So that.
Think John McCain, that's going to be good news for Senator McCain.
Oh, I think it's good news for Senator McCain. And the other weakness that he has is nobody knows him. And if McCain does not define him as what he is, I have said publicly, and I will again, that unless he proves me wrong, he is a Marxist.
Yeah, that.
Workers of the world unite. Somebody fire up the band. Play the Internationale. Obama's a Marxist. What a bunch of stupid jackasses. A Marxist? From each according to his means, to each according to his needs, all of that stuff? Dictatorship of the proletariat? Yeah, I don't think so. But then again, you know, he's been reading it. I was the most liberal member of the United States Senate. You know, they would have called Hillary that if she'd been the nominee. Oh, she's the most liberal member of the United States Senate. Jesus, if Joe Lieberman ran on the Democratic presidential ticket, Flush Flimball and Michael Savage and this Gallagher creep and the rest of the... Oh, he's the most liberal member of the United States Senate. Because they're still... What did I say at the beginning of the program? They have no new ideas. They have no new ways of opposing us. So they're going to just trot out the same old tired guy. He's a liberal! God, he's a liberal! Save us! He's a liberal Marxist! Well, now, George Bush did nominate a woman to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals who was a former Maoist. I know he did that, but Barack Obama, a Marxist? Oh, for Christ's sakes.
We hear that every day. Congressman, every day somebody will say to me, and I've said it, it's as if this is a guy who's desperately trying to cover up what seems to be kind of the old school Marxist radical liberal faith.
Every day somebody says something to me that, you know, somebody will say to me every day, you know, I was sitting on the porch at the home in the sunshine with a little blanket over my lap, and somebody came over to me and said, you know what, there's a race of men in the trees, and I'm for tough legislation. Yeah, definitely. And of course, I'm an excellent nut job. I go insane slowly on the driveway. Definitely. And somebody's always saying something. They come up to me every day, and they say, you know what? The moon is made of green cheese. Every day they're saying these things to me. And they say the moon's made of green cheese, and Barack Obama is a Marxist. Definitely a Marxist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course, Wapner comes on in 30 minutes. Definitely Wapner.
Old ideology.
Absolutely.
That's
no doubt about it.
And that's what. And John McCain, it's incumbent upon John McCain to point that out, because if he doesn't, people are going to get enamored with this guy the way they've been.
They're going to get enamored with him. Yeah, it'll be like the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. They'll get enamored of him. Jesus, help us, please. Tom DeLay. Tom, by the way, is still under the weather, under indictment. I'm sorry, under indictment. He's still facing money laundering charges. Still facing charges of conspiracy to launder money. But he had a little spare time out there, you know, to call into a third tier right wing bladderhead and say, "Ah, he's a commie." See, that's what you can't say he's a commie anymore, because there really aren't any commies left. He's a Marxist. That, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that Marxist, right. Yeah, got it. Marxist. Did you hear me? I said he's a Marxist. Sometimes I think it's going to be fun riding downhill to November. And sometimes I think that I'm going to have to refill the prescription that keeps me from vomiting. And I'm kind of wishy-washy that way. I go, I go back and forth. Oh, by the way, you know my favorite television program, American Idol. Not. Turns out they got strong-armed into having Dear Leader on the program. Back in 2007, they showed up on American Idol, Dear Leader, and Pickles. And they thanked viewers for helping to raise $70 million during the charity special, Idol Gives Back. So they did it again this year. You know, Idol did, you know, the charity thing again this year. And the producers really, really, really didn't want to have George Bush come back on their screens because he's ratings death. And it turns out that the creator of the program, Nigel Lithgow, said recently that American Idol had to relent because they got pressure from the president's people to allow him to speak during the star-studded extravaganza broadcast. No, really. Nigel Lithgow, this is the quote from him. "The president is always saying, 'I want to be on Give Back.' We didn't ask the president this year to say anything because we were all a bit embarrassed about him. The office insisted that because the primary candidates were on it, the president would like to come on and say thank you, too. Pitiful. Just pathetic. What a sad, sorry little man he was. If he wasn't such a murderous bastard, you would almost find it somewhere in your soul to have sympathy for him, wouldn't you? They insisted that we didn't really want the president on this year because we're all a bit embarrassed about him. Does that just make you a little bit... It certainly does take a little bit of a luster off of the American patina, if you will. You got producers of a smarmy game show that involves some snarky British fellow saying lousy, tawdry things to people who can't sing and occasionally saying snide, tawdry, snarky things to a washed-up disco diva, Paula Abdul. And America tunes in with rabid attention. And even these people, you know, marketers. I mean, this is, having American Idol say that they're embarrassed of George Bush, that's like having, the guy who cleans out the abattoir at the slaughterhouse say that, you know, I don't want to visit from the president. And he kind of embarrasses me. And that is embarrassing to me. The president of the United States of America. Oh, I remember when the right wing, Bill Clinton is bringing down the dignity of the office. Sex. No dignity. And George Bush running in 2000 saying, I'm going to return dignitude to Washington, D.C. And now he is such a public embarrassment that even a game show producer doesn't want him on the air. Kind of hard to swallow that. Just sort of difficult to get that down and keep it from coming back up the gorge. And what Susan said a little bit ago in her phone call is absolutely true. John McCain says he reserves the right to run his own warrantless wiretapping program against you and me. How does he come up with this idea? Well, the theory is that the president's wartime powers trump federal criminal statutes and court oversight. Now, it's not speculation. That's a statement released by his own campaign this past Monday. Mother McCree. The president's wartime powers. You know, I'm just one of these constitutional nerds, I guess. But the way I read the little pamphlet, you don't get the wartime powers until Congress declares war. I mean, that's the way I always read the document, and God knows my government and the civics teachers read it the same way. Congress does the war declaring, and then the president does the war running. Well, how's John McCain, under that set of circumstances, how's John McCain going to have wartime powers? There ain't no war! Look, there's no war left in Iraq. It's a damned occupation. It is the Iraqupation. Iraqupation. It is the Iraqupation. There's no war left. Oh, we fly a few, you know, we fly a few cruise missiles into neighborhoods every now and then just to remind remind the po folks who's in charge. There's no war. We didn't declare war on Afghanistan either, and frankly, we could have. We set it up that way. We gave them the ultimatum, turn over bin Laden. They said we won't turn over bin Laden. Congress could have stepped in, passed it into the House, and wherefore and therefore and by large, sir, and then we declare war on Afghanistan. They didn't sign off, and they send it over to the Senate, and they say we do too, and bang, you're at war with Afghanistan. But we didn't do that. Because we didn't have the guts to do that. It's a lot easier just for a wimpy, tepid, servile Congress to cede its authority, as Senator Byrd noted, and just let the president do what he wants. I mean, you know, who do we think we are? Congress or something? Oh, wait a minute. Never mind. Yeah, this latest installment of How I Will Be the Third Bush Term follows about 10 days after one of McCain's so-called surrogates said that the McCain-Turian candidate wants telecom immunity hearings. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. No, here's the word from McBush advisor Doug Holtz Eakin. Where have I heard that name before? Somebody help me here. That guy's a sleaze bucket. I know it. Can't remember why. Doug Holtz Eakin said the following in writing. Neither the administration nor the telecoms need apologize for actions that most people, except for the ACLU and trial lawyers, understand were constitutional and appropriate in the wake of the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Yeah, okay, Doug Holtz-Eakin. Got it. Because that clause right there in the Constitution, I think it's in Article 97. It says, except in the wake of the attacks of September 11, 2001. Okay. We do not know what lies ahead in our nation's fight against radical Islamic extremists, but John McCain will do everything he can to protect Americans from such threats, including asking the telecoms for appropriate assistance to collect intelligence against foreign threats to the United States as authorized by Article 2 of the Constitution. Read Article 2. I don't know what in the hell Doug Holtz Eakin's talking about. And I mean, I didn't have to, like, you know, hold my finger under the words as I read Article 2. I mean, it just flies right. Just read them. I read silently. My lips don't move. And short of getting some of the, you know, orange sunshine acid that Doug Holtz Eakin is apparently dropping every day, I don't know. Now, the folks over at Wired say that the Article 2 citation is key since it refers to President Bush's long-standing arguments that the president has nearly unlimited powers during a time of war. But damn it to hell, to have the war under the Constitution, Congress has to declare it. I know that may sound a little bit pedantic, but it really does matter. Because that whole warfare thing in the Constitution is not framed in precatory language. It is rather framed in hortatory language. You know, no mays and a whole bunch of shalls and shall nots. And, you know, we have people like the John Yoo to thank for the administration's analysis because it says that the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply. I can't read this stuff and not without taking the Bush administration's position. The Bush administration's position is that the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution... Where's that tequila bottle? The Bush administration's position is the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution doesn't apply inside the United States in the fight against terrorism. I'm sorry for the pregnant pauses you could drive trucks through during this program. I'm a fairly loquacious fellow. I'm seldom at a loss for words. Mark Levine, are you still around, buddy? You want to help me with this here? If you are, please, somebody, anybody. Legal education out there. The Fourth Amendment does not apply inside the United States. Oh, so it applies outside the United States in cases of fight against terror? What? You know, the sort of very, very bland diet that I am on precludes a lot of things. I'm done with Velveeta for the rest of my days. I'm done with high-fat foods. Now, there's an argument that I am done with my beloved glass of beer on Friday night. I'm done with just about everything. Diet-wise. But Lord, ain't this tempting. Because, you know, if I... Fourth Amendment did not apply inside the United States in the fight against terrorism. Because stone cold sober, I'm not getting through that. I can't make that work. Ecstasy? Acid? Mushrooms? Something? Big old swig of bottled in bond rye? I mean... I don't... get it. John Yoo and that dirty little crowd that just makes crap up as they go along, and maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's why I don't get it. Because they're just making crap up as they go along. Help me. Pick up the phone. Tell me I'm not losing it. The Fourth Amendment does not apply inside the United States in the fight against terrorism. The Fourth Amendment only applies inside the United States on days that end in Z. The Fourth Amendment only applies inside the United States, when Barbara Bush polishes her pearls. What? When the hell does the Fourth Amendment apply inside the United States? Because if it doesn't apply during the fight against terrorism, which is a war that hasn't been declared in the first place, and there's nowhere you can go to find a starting point and a stopping point of the war against terrorism, that just means that the Fourth Amendment doesn't damned well apply at all. It's dead. They took it out behind the barn and beat it to death. And I can't believe that that's the America I live in 2008. And I can't believe the political 2-year-olds that, I can't vote for Hillary, I'm a Democrat for McCain. Do you really, really want that? You 2-year-olds. Do you really want a president, another president, who says that the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply inside the United States during the war on terrorism? Because the war on terrorism just goes on and on and on forever and ever and ever. War without end. And as long as the war without end is going on, then guess what? No Fourth Amendment. That's what these sons of bitches said. That's what these un-American, traitorous, treasonous enemies of the state said. Holy crap! And John McCain says, that's, my friends, that's what I want too. Okay. Gonna get a little help here, maybe. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, it's Bob. Bob, it's Dave up in Northern California.
Hey, Dave. Help me here.
Well, you know, the obvious thing which you know, and I hear it from you, and so that is that we are totally the victims of deception. That is to say that there is no kind of a legitimate war. Just a word to throw out there. There is no legitimate occupation. What we are experiencing is very greedy, ill-motivated people profiting immensely by the pretext that there's some kind of a legitimate conflict there.
But I mean, but daggum, Dave, it's not complicated language in the Constitution. It's real readable. And it doesn't say anything about, you know, in cases of wars against terrorism. I mean, why did these opinions were crafted by lawyers, and there are rules of ethics for lawyers that say that a lawyer cannot advise his client to engage in criminal conduct.
Well,
these guys should be stripped of their law licenses, for Christ's sakes.
The whole neocon faction that we're dealing with should be stripped of everything. That is to say, they are using words intended to mislead us. You're not somebody that gets sucked into this thing. But let's say we invade a country for profit. And believe me, it is a lot of profit for Lockheed Martin and for ExxonMobil and for Halliburton and this whole neocon faction there. They are making big, big bucks. And so some people don't like their country being invaded, and they go find some kind of a weapon. More often than not, they're just throwing rocks and sticks at these assailants. But let's say they do come up with some rifles and all, and they're shooting at them. Now, those people are what they call terrorists, not people that don't like having their country invaded. They're called insurgents and terrorists and enemies. The enemy. And that's what we're being fed. And, you know, if we hear it over and over enough, we're supposed to buy it. And I don't think you're going to, Bob. I know that you are very much aware that we are being led down a bad, bad path here by people who have their own greedy motivations driving them. Are we still hooked?
No, we're there. We're there. I'm down with you every word you're saying.
Okay, because I think we're largely in agreement on this. I don't think that for a minute this is, you're hearing words that are words intended to mislead. That's all they're there for, you know.
But Dave. Okay, we got to do a little statistics here, I guess. And we got to contemplate, first of all, the number of people who have actually read the Constitution. And, or I don't know, maybe we don't do that. Maybe we just talk about, you know, the average American. And is the average American such a pitiful wreck, Dave, that if as long as some well-heeled, nicely dressed freak gets in front of the camera and says, well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the war on terrorism, so the Fourth Amendment doesn't count. Yeah, this isn't a pickup game of baseball in the vacant lot where you decide where the bases go. It's the flipping Constitution.
This is coming out of some people who have an ulterior motive. It is their own special interest at stake, and in order to be able to get away with it, they feed out all this nonsense. You know, they make you think this is the Constitution. I don't think they could get to you. You know, I never really studied the Constitution. I love listening to people like yourself and Mark and all that have studied the Constitution that can explain it and put it out clearly.
Well, I mean, but we're not talking about rocket science here, Dave. I I encourage you to use the Google or whatever. I mean, just like I'm going to do right now. Fourth Amendment text.
Good.
Okay. It's not complicated. Okay. I mean, the framers of the Constitution, their genius lay in the fact that they made the Constitution vague in spots and abundantly plain in others. And the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution says the following. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Wow.
There's not a three-syllable unreasonable. Okay, there's a five-syllable word in there. That's the affirmation. Yeah, okay. There's a five-syllable word and a four-syllable word. That's as kinky as it gets.
Well, clearly they are not following that. They slipped the thing on us overnight one time called the Patriot Act, and that took away and canceled all of that out. There's no more. No more illegal search and seizure and needing probable cause. You know? All that is somehow gone. They took it away from us.
And we let them? Is that it, Dave? We let them?
I don't think you're going to, Bob. And I think anybody that's listening to you that thinks, can I do something? Is there something I can do that will undo what they have done? Because I'm one of them. If there is something I can do that can undo what they have done, I'm ready to do it, you know. I certainly do everything that I can that's within reason. I stand on sidewalks every week with various protests. But they ignore all that. They're of the position that they don't give a damn how the people think. They don't even give a damn how the people vote. They control all that. They rig elections. They cheat. They made an art of deception. And they
see, what drives me nuts, though, Dave, is that, you know, once upon a time, and, you know, I freely admit this, and Mark Levine talks about his experience, too. Once upon a time, I went through law school. And you have to write briefs in law school, and you have to brief cases, and you have to, you know, you get hypothetical situations where you have to apply a law to a set of facts or the Constitution to a set of facts. And if I, at any point in my law school career, had turned in an argument that said the Second Amendment to the Constitution trumps the Fourth, or I'm sorry, Article 2 of the Constitution, Trump's the Fourth Amendment, they'd have thrown my ass out. I mean,
any credible law school would do that.
Yeah. Well, even the draw spunky law schools would do that. I don't know, maybe you could get away with it with Regent University Law School or Jerry Falwell Law School or something like that, Oral Roberts Law School, because, you know, the Constitution's just a miracle.
Yeah, that's where they're getting their.
But no, the guy that came up with this genius piece of work was Mark Levine's classmate at Yale.
Well, they've got a purpose, Bob, and it's not to be honorable, forthright people representing the intent of the law. That's not their purpose. These are obviously, at least to me, obviously people who have an ulterior special interest, some big corporate greed thing is driving them, and they're selling us a bill of nonsense to allow them to get away with grabbing as much as they can, and that's what we're up against. And no, if there's a way we can avoid it, if there's a way we can say, we don't put up with your crazy nonsense, and step down, not in our name, whatever, I want to jump on that wagon and ride it to wherever it's going.
And I don't even know if there's a wagon anymore. I mean, you know, I'm just a little jackass hillbilly with a microphone sitting in the hills somewhere screaming my spleen loose. And the same thing applies for other people talking about it. We're talking, but most of the people we're talking to, Dave, and I don't mean this as an insult, okay? I sincerely hope you understand it. Most of the people we're talking to get it. I don't know how you tell that guy who's plastered in front of the NASCAR race or that woman who lives for American Idol. I don't know how you talk to those people. I don't know where you find them. I don't know how you get to them. You know, they go from their house to work to church to the house to, and maybe the grocery store once in a while.
You, Bob, can prevail upon your listeners to try to get it out as much as we can. Those people that are marginally dysfunctional, that listen to their Limbaugh and their Fox and really don't know where truth is at, we have an obligation to try to provide some enlightenment. And their program, they've got their talking points. They know how to avoid it as best they can. But I think we have a burden on us to be able to get through it as best we can and cause them to reflect on reality. If we can do that, we will have provided some valuable service. Because as long as they just listen to their Fox and they listen to their Sean Hannity and they believe what they're told, it's working. They're pulling it off. These greedy neocons, special interests, are taking everything and keeping the people stupid. And we have a real obligation to try to turn that around. I try.
And I guess we all do try, Dave. But I suppose I get a little frustrated, a little bit demoralized sometimes. Is that a fair way to put it, do you think?
Well, I can understand that. I can understand it very much. And some people are almost impossible to talk with. You know, there's a big element of people that want so much to believe that we are a wonderful country, that we are bringing good to the world, that we stand for decency and democracy. We are riding on the white horse, and we have our red, white, and blue banner up there. And the idea that this is one sicko country run by criminals is just not within the realm of comprehension. They can't see that. It's unthinkable. You're telling me this wonderful country that I love so much has hardcore psychopaths at the top? That can't be. No. You know, and I can understand that. I mean, I and you would love to believe that we are a part of a truly wonderful country that is out in the world trying to bring good and right. I think we'd like to believe that. But we're not going to throw reality in the toilet to get there.
Yeah, I don't get a choice. I got reality right here. It's about, you know, it's about a centimeter off of the tip of my nose, and I don't get to go away from it, and it never leaves me very far behind.
Well, I do love what you're trying to do, Bob. I love you and your whole network, and I hope you'll be able to stay with it. They fight us every way they can. They try to limit our chances of getting this word out. But you do it anyway, my friend. And you get through to some of us who try to share it every way we can.
Well, thank you, Dave.
It's all over the place, and I speak what I hear from you as much as I can.
Well, I do appreciate it, and it's energizing and inspiring to know that you do. I'll be here as long as the lights stay on. You know, they'll drag me out of here.
Thank you so much, and thank you to your whole team. I love your people out there on the chat room and everything. There's a lot of good people, and we'll get this word out as best we can. Hopefully, it'll be enough.
Well, you know, just don't be shy about reading the Constitution, Dave. I mean, like I said, it wasn't designed to be confusing. It was designed to be a pretty plain statement of how the government was supposed to work. And it was written by geniuses, but it was designed for execution by people who aren't.
Yeah, they didn't make it so uncomplicated that normal people couldn't understand what they had in their hands.
Well, go look at the clauses concerning impeachment. It's just plain as damn day, And when you read the clock, and that's, you know, that's why my blood pressure does what it does behind the microphone here. When you actually read the Constitution, and you read what it says about impeachment, just the Constitution, you read it, the plain language, within the four corners of the document, and then you turn around and you see Nancy Pelosi saying, well, you know, it's off the table. You realize that the woman has violated the oath that she took to become a member of the House of Representatives.
Correct, because that Constitution does not say may, it says shall. The investigation shall be initiated where there's evidence that these high crimes and misdemeanors have taken place.
Yeah.
How does she pull that off? How does she do that?
The same way that these clowns say that the Fourth Amendment just doesn't count. If you say it, you make it so. This is our lovely little idea of a republic that has been reduced to a faith-based piece of crap. They treat the Constitution like Tinkerbell out of Peter Pan, Dave. Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. The scene where Peter comes out and says, "Oh, you know, Tinkerbell's dying. You have to clap. You have to believe. If only you believe. You know, if we just believe that the war on terrorism trumps the whole blessed Constitution, it does." It's the Tinkerbell theory of constitutional law. And it just makes me want to slap people.
Ask your listeners to try to take this message and share it with anybody that they know that hasn't got their head out of their butt enough to know where reality and truth is. You see it, you say it. Motivate people to share it as best they can. Let's get it around.
I'm a trying, you know, because and I don't see the funny thing about me, I don't see this as a Republican or a Democrat issue.
No.
The Constitution is silent as to Republicans and Democrats.
Republicans, however, are today a truly programmed group of people, and they sing the song to the choir that has been preaching to them.
And, you know, there's Lottie in the chat room saying, no, Bob, they treat the Constitution like the Bible. They pick and choose. Yeah, but he's right. You know, the parts of the Constitution they don't like, yeah, well, you know, the war on terror trumps the Fourth Amendment because the Fourth Amendment's a pain in our ass. Oy. Dave, thanks for the call, brother.
Thank you for being there, Bob. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye now. Our good buddy Dave in Northern California. And onward. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Scott from Salem.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Well, you called for a recent law school graduate, and you got one.
Bless your heart. Help me here. I'm going to just come unstuck.
No, I mean, you clearly have it. I think what you've done is you've actually framed it perfectly for people, right? Because this is what these guys are saying, right? These guys are when the president has unlimited authority during time of war, right? And so all we have to do now is define this as a time of war, and the president therefore has unlimited authority.
But Scott, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the Constitution doesn't even say that the president has unlimited authority during time of war.
Sure, but the Constitution is vague enough that the subsequent Supreme Court cases have left that open. Right? I mean, that's, what is it, American Steel Tube versus whatever.
Yeah.
Right? The case from the Truman era where Truman wanted to take control of the steel industry.
Right.
Basically, you know, said that because the president's powers are actually so limited, there are not that many of them, right? The executive doesn't have that many specifically granted powers.
Right.
That the power to wage war, to protect the nation, is the sort of raison d'etre of the presidency. And so when the Congress grants the president that authority, the Congress is putting the president in that branch, the executive and the president, because the Constitution vests the power in a president, they're giving the president a grant of superior power. This is how the case law has developed, and I know you know this. This is how they get there. But this is what you've shown people. And of course, you're right. Did we declare war? No. Did Congress write this authorization to use military force in the war on terrorism, whatever the heck that is? Yeah, they did. And what did Bush take that to mean? Bush took that to mean war without end, both within the United States and without. And that's what he's been pursuing. They've been pursuing that policy piece by piece, pushing the boundaries, and every time you say, wait a minute, isn't that illegal? They say, hey, we're at war, and I'm the president. And the president's first responsibility is to protect the nation. So you know that Fourth Amendment? That's a quaint thing for times of peace.
But,
this is the quote that said, you know, that the Constitution isn't a suicide pact, right?
Well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is what they dust off. They say, look, if you want to protect the Constitution, we better protect the very integrity of the nation. That's what's at stake. And the president is going to do that for us, and we all better just stop worrying about our Fourth Amendment rights. Those are nice to have, but they're not going to mean anything if the terrorists win.
The terrorists won't give you no Fourth Amendment rights. Oh, God, I've heard it, Scott.
Exactly.
I've heard it.
Exactly, right? So this is the stark difference, and this is what's great, right? Because it does matter who you vote for. Right? So I think that this is the way we need to frame it. For people who are even possibly thinking of writing in Hillary Clinton in the general election, or, I don't know, voting for McCain or not voting at all, say, look, let's just look at the way these people think about what the government is supposed to be doing. And just let's contemplate how remarkable it is that what we did is we suspended the Constitution.
Without suspending the Constitution.
Sure, but...
There's an element of genius involved here, Scott.
Got to admit it. It's pretty good. It's pretty clever, right? And there's a huge element of absolute spinelessness on the part of Congress. Because Congress could say, easily, we're either repealing the uniform authorization, the UAMF, right? Authorization
right.
for military force. We're either repealing it, or we're sunsetting it, or we're going to clarify what we mean, that this is not a declaration of war, and therefore we do not transfer authority to the president that would be commensurate with his wartime authority to protect the country. And this is where all that stuff comes in, right? It's the exigencies of the battlefield that make you need to suspend habeas corpus on the battlefield. Now, if you decide the whole planet's a battlefield, guess what you just did? You just suspended habeas corpus.
And, you know, I'm a little rusty, Scott. What about treaty obligations? You know, within this sort of Alice down the rabbit hole view of constitutional law, do presidential wartime powers also eliminate treaty obligations?
You could get there. I think pretty easily, because the treaty is, you know, we'll walk through this together, so I'll make sure I get it right, actually, but the treaties are negotiated by the president, right, and they're approved by Congress.
Ratified by the Senate, yes.
Right? Ratified by the Senate. So what that means is it's a presidential power that's ratified by the Congress, right? So it's the same as any other act of legislation, actually. It's actually superior, but it's the same as any other act of legislation. In other words, if you do something that violates a treaty, you're actually violating a piece of legislation, basically.
Yes.
Right? Now.
Like the Geneva Convention.
For example, right? However, we just determined that the president can violate an act of Congress if he needs to in order to protect the country in the time of war.
So
exigencies of the battlefield.
So within that way of, you know, I feel like I'm really, really trouncing the word thinking, and participle. But within that way of thinking, then, for instance, all of the things, the horrors that were sort of within the minds of the framers at the time that they put the Constitution together. Say, for instance, the Constitution says there shall be no bills of attainder.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution says there shall be no ex post facto laws.
Yep.
In essence, the Constitution says there shall be no courts of star chamber.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. What do we have now?
But that's all okay now.
How else can you think of the kinds of, quote, due process that we're giving currently to the people that are detained? Some of them have been American citizens. If that's not a star chamber, I don't know what is.
Well, did you catch the statement from the guy running the show at Guantanamo the other day? Let me see if I've still got this. Somebody sent me an email. Oh, yeah, here it is. I got this a few days ago. Somebody listening to maybe an NPR show or something said, if for no other reason than the statement I heard 45 seconds ago, our America is dead under the heel of the Bush cabal. General Thomas Hartman, chief legal counsel to the tribunals, just said in the most straightforward manner that if one of the Gitmo prisoners were to be found not guilty by those Star Chamber tribunals, he would remain a prisoner at Gitmo. The quote is something like, ours is a two-tiered system designed to protect America. These prisoners were brought here because, as an enemy combatant, they represent a threat to our armed forces. If they are found not guilty of the charges, that does not mean, that does not change their designation as an enemy combatant. As such, we must continue to hold them to protect our forces.
Isn't that remarkable? I mean, this is the choice we have to make, right? We have the choice where are we going to live in this country for another 8 years where people say stuff like that? You know, I mean, it just makes you want to barf. You're like, are you kidding me? There must be a better way of doing it. You must pick them up for jaywalking or something.
Scott, sometimes I'm afraid that people think that I'm just doing theater here when I talk about, you know, I want to put a rock through a window or just sit here and bang my head into the desk. I'm past crying.
Well, you and your last caller were talking about what to do, right?
Yeah.
Well, voting would be a good thing.
Yeah, that's a nice start.
Right? And so, I mean, I think this is a pretty important election, right? And I thought it was really interesting. We saw Obama on TV today, and they were asking him all the questions you might expect them to, and about, you know, are you going to choose her as a running mate? Are you going to tell us now that you're not going to choose her as a running mate? And all this sort of nonsense. They tried to paint him in a corner. And he did his Harvard Law thing, and he floated like a butterfly. And then they said, okay, what are you going to tell a 45-year-old woman who wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton, really wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton, and now doesn't know what to do? And he came out with a series of positive, assertive statements to appeal to those people. Say, look, if you care about X, sending your kids to school, compare me to McCain. You want me to win. If you care about getting these our kids, maybe even your kid, out of the war, compare me to McCain. You want me to win. And he marched down this long list of things that are really personal to people and reasonable, right? And I think this is another example of it. You know, if you want people, if you want someone to continue the policy where what they've said is, because we were attacked on 9/11, it's war without end everywhere on the planet, then you should vote for McCain. But if you think that's an outrageous statement, if you think, well, let me finish that, actually. War without end everywhere on the planet, and therefore, Everything that happens after the last word of the main section of the Articles of the Constitution is optional, and even some of the stuff in the Articles is optional, then vote for McCain. You know, that basically what we've done is, this is like the Civil War. It's like our Civil War moment, right? When...
It really is, isn't it?
Right? When Lincoln said, hey man, we're talking about the very survival of the Republic here, right? Habeas corpus. You know, I got the Republic to save here. And people have forgiven him over time for doing that, though we continue to analyze whether that was the right thing to do or not. But you have to ask yourself, is this the revolutionary moment? Is this the Civil War moment? Is this really the protecting the very republic itself.
Well, you know what a history geek I am, Scott.
Yeah.
I can't help asking if this is the moment where Rome said bye bye to the republic, and just sort of slowly acquiesced into empire. Because please bear with me for just a moment. After Octavian finally got everything settled down with Mark Antony and got consolidated power in himself, he put on a very, very pious act and talked about restoring the republic. And so, you know, he had himself made consul a couple of times. The Senate voted him imperator for life. But in something like 23 BC, he said, I'm not going to be consul anymore. You get yourself some new consuls. And the republic's back. But everybody looking backward at that from a historical standpoint recognizes that as the end of the republic and the beginning of what's called the Principate. And as a function of that, the republic died. You know, they didn't, like I've said before, they didn't hang a sign said, you know, republic over, welcome to empire. It's just what it transformed into. And then the question for me is this right now where we are? Is this that transformative moment? Is what is going to happen in November 2008, Scott? Is this that fork in the road from which we cannot come back?
Yeah, I think we took a fork in the road a little while ago.
Well, okay, I do too.
Right, and I think that. I think, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm willing to be optimistic. I think you can go back. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think you can go back.
But how much do you have to undo to do that?
It's really surprising to me. It's really amazing to me how, in a very short period of time, and actually in two presidencies, and I wouldn't include Clinton's presidency in that, the presidency itself has been transformed into something that just sort of wouldn't have been recognizable 30 years ago.
Certainly wouldn't have been recognizable to the framers.
And I think it's kind of remarkable to me. I think it's worth pointing out, though, because I know you got very upset about this, right? Like, are we really throwing out the Fourth Amendment, right? And people need to understand that the Constitution is what the people in power say it is. And that's why it matters who's in power. It's not the same. It's not all the same. It's not all the same. These guys, over a fairly short period of time, completely changed the underlying structure of our government. Right? They didn't actually repeal anything. You know, new constitutional amendments. We didn't have to, you know, fire a shot inside the country. But it's really remarkable what they've done in terms of reinterpreting and putting a new lens on this, on what the Constitution actually means, and what the powers of the presidency are.
Let me ask you another one then, Scott. I have a very low opinion of Congress right now.
Mm-hmm.
And from my standpoint, they've by God earned it. What do you do? Let's go ahead and hypothesize President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, I want to roll this back. I want to get, you know, I want to get sane about the separation of powers, and let's just assume all of that.
Yep.
And a servile Congress comes to him and says, no, sir, please don't do that. You're protecting the American people. You've got to have these powers. And like unto my ancient Rome analogy, it gets all set up where it looks like he was begged to take the extraordinary powers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you envision something like that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, and that's kind of actually what's happened now, right? I mean, that's what they did with Bush, right? Because certainly the authorization to use force doesn't say what they are making it out to have said, right? It's not a declaration of war.
No.
But what Congress never did is Congress never actually said, which they could have easily, by the way, this is not a declaration of war, Right? They didn't do that. So you're right. So you have a so servile Congress. Now, servile to whom? Right? If the Democrats maintain control of the Congress and they want to be servile, they'll be, well, hopefully, they would be servile to what Obama wants to do. Right? So they're, I think there's two paths. I think the most likely path is the Congress is going to do nothing, right? And that because the power that they've granted to the to the executive branch is so open-ended, Obama can take it in whatever direction he wants. And, you know, he could set up due process for these people. He doesn't have to suspend habeas corpus. He could go to the FISA court and get pre-authorization, even post-authorization for the wiretaps they find necessary. It's all procedural stuff, right?
Right, because you've got a matter. I mean, you can go ahead and do the wiretap and then get and then get the sanction passed on it.
Exactly.
You've got it's days you've got.
So you can just decide. I mean, if you're Bush, you're going to decide, you know what? I don't even want to do that. Right. And Obama himself, without Congress doing a thing, can say, look, here's the new policy. The new policy is you're going to go to the FISA court, either before or after. He writes an executive order, boom, done. All right? He brings a few people, a few of his people in. He takes the people who weren't doing that, and he fires them. And guess what? The whole thing has changed essentially overnight. Just because this is the problem, and people need to understand this. The Constitution says what the people in power say it says. It's an open-ended document.
And that goes all the way back to something like Marbury versus Madison. The Constitution says what the Supreme Court says it says.
Exactly. And guess who gets to pick the Supreme Court, right?
Well, I was heading in that direction.
Right, so the beautiful thing about this is, okay, so what, the Supreme Court's now going to come, having spent the last 20 years saying the Constitution is an open-ended document and the presidency is very powerful, right? They're going to come back now and say, guess what? It's actually unconstitutional for the president to go by the literal words in the statute.
Well, and that's something I wanted to bring up with you as well. Because we have to take into account the jokers that are in the deck on the Supreme Court. You fail to take into account at your own hazard.
Yeah.
And you've got the leader of the pack there. I mean, John Roberts may be the Chief Justice, but I think the ideological heart and soul of the so-called conservative wing of the court is Antonin Scalia. I don't think there's any there's no way to argue against that. Not that I'm telling you can't.
Well, I could have fun time arguing against that, but it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
But and this is a guy who has said, you know, oh, I'm a strict constructionist. I'm an originalist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not just a strict constructionist. He is an originalist. In other words, if it doesn't say it in the four corners of the document, it ain't constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take an issue like this, and frankly, I think they're hypocrites, Scott. Because they're cafeteria originalists, if you will.
Yeah, sure they are. Yeah.
But you know, how could Scalia not look at something like the Fourth Amendment and the body of the Constitution itself, and this argument that based on, you know, case law extension as you've described it. How can he, being the brass bound originalist that he is, look at an argument like that and say, you know, that's not in this document?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. But there's a lot of good arguments that you can use there, that they will use, that he does use and other people use. Like one of the arguments is the structuralist argument, where they say the Constitution is basically lays out a structure for the government. It's a tripartite structure with the Congress and the judicial branch and the executive, and there's a separation of powers and there's a balance of powers. Right? Congress can oversee the executive, and Congress has to approve the appointments of the executive, of the Supreme Court's justices, and so forth. Right? And Congress can expand and contract the jurisdiction of the federal courts, all that kind of stuff. Right? But what they'll say, what they say is, well, you know, because there's the first three articles, 1 through 3, and you can't have the Congress be more important than the executive, and you can't have the executive be more important than the judiciary, that when it looks like the executive is weak, we'll just give them more power. Right? So you look at Article 2, it doesn't actually say that much about what the executive is supposed to do. The most unique and characteristic thing is this wartime, war powers thing. And that's how they get there. They say, well, you know, that must be, like, essential to the structure of the Constitution, even though it doesn't say it in these words. It wouldn't make sense as a balance of power if the Congress were more powerful than the president.
And so it's sort of a sine qua non, res ipsa loquitur, you know.
Exactly, exactly. This is how I was trained in the law, right? I was trained as a legal realist. You work backwards from the answer to the Constitution, not forward from the Constitution to the answer. So if, and this is exactly what was his Wu or Lu or whatever his name is.
Yeah, John Wu.
Or you
John Yu. John Yu.
Yu. It's exactly what he did. He said, well, let's say, for example, that we wanted to break a treaty, right? Because we want to torture people. Why? Because we think it's necessary to torture people. Let's just give the guy good faith, right? Let's give the guy the good faith that he actually believes this nonsense argument about you found the guy who knows where the nuclear bomb is buried.
Yeah, the 24 scenario.
Yeah, the 24 scenario, right? Which I should just point out never happens.
Yes.
It never happens. And, you know, if you knew that, you would have known enough to stop the thing in the beginning, but whatever.
Yeah, you know, when even the Israelis come out and say that the 24 scenario is a bunch of BS, you know, you got to figure that it's a bunch of BS.
Right. So, I mean there's a basic sort of information problem here, which is if the thing is a secret, how do you know this is the guy that knows the secret? Right? How do you know that? Because if you know, you can't have that information. It's like a Schrodinger's cat kind of thing. You know, it's just not possible. But if you forget that, and just take him at his word that he thinks actually he's protecting the country by doing this. Okay, so that means, and let's assume that he's further misinformed and he thinks the torture actually works. Right, so that's going to make the guy tell the truth. So now he says, okay, so you know, bad stuff's going to happen unless we can torture people. How shall we get to making torture legal? That's the answer, and we work our way back to the Constitution.
So it's results-based or ends-based legal analysis.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing about the Constitution that people, you know, I have my little pocket copy of it right here, right? And you know, you were joking before. You were saying, you know, I submitted a term paper in law school that said that the Article 2 trumps the Fourth Amendment, I would have been failed.
Yeah.
If you went to law school today, you'd get an A on that paper. Right? If you could argue it, you'd get an A because that's the whole point. Right? To say, how does one argue that Article 2 trumps the Fourth Amendment? Build me an argument like that. And that's what these guys do in the Supreme Court. They say, well, we think it's important that the president be powerful. And we think it's important that the president be able to be especially powerful in times of war because it's the unique aspect of the presidency. So if the president tells us to protect us, he needs to torture people, how shall we make that possible? And they work their, and then they do their originalist thing and they put the powdered wigs on and the whole thing, right? They're going to find it in there.
Even if it's not.
Even if it's not. And, you know, these guys are originalists, right? But they don't believe in legislative history. So they won't read the conversations of the congressmen on the floor of the Senate while they're debating the bill. Right? They say, hey, just tell me what the bill says. I don't care what some guy said when he was up grandstanding and showboating. He may have been doing that for a constituency that wasn't powerful enough or whatever. Show me the bill, the words, the language. Except when they get back to stuff like this, and then they get all teary-eyed about the debates among the founders about the relative powers of the branches of government. And they start to quote this stuff.
Oh, off to the Federalist Papers they go.
Exactly. Federalist 59, you know. It's like, are you guys kidding me? That's legislative history. So at home, that's
oh, I know. Well, you know, that's like the habeas corpus business. You know, there's that one piece of correspondence from Thomas Jefferson where he says, well, of course habeas corpus, as we've expressed it in the New Republic, would apply to aliens, because if it doesn't apply to foreigners, it doesn't apply to anybody.
Right.
And that's real easy to get your head around.
Right. But you, the other thing you have to remember is that there are a lot of people in this country who say, and we spend time with some of these people, so we've heard these arguments. You know, they say, hey, man, I've got nothing to hide.
Right.
Even people who are up to something bad have something to hide.
Yeah, the people who grew up watching reruns of Dragnet, it got out on a technicality.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, through the 1960s and into the 1970s, I don't know if you recall any of this, but I remember seeing in my early childhood, I remember seeing bumper stickers that said "Impeach Earl Warren."
Well,
and of course, Gerald Ford led an attempt to impeach Earl Warren.
Right, sure. But I mean, it's fair to admit that the Warren Court was pretty radical, right? They did with the Constitution in their own way what this court's doing with the Constitution in their own way. That's the object lesson here, right? I mean, they did some fancy maneuvering, but it appears...
Oh, look, anybody who's ever sat down and tried to read, I mean, you know, I just told Dave that the Constitution's a pretty easy read, and I think it is, but anybody who's ever sat down and tried to take off down the garden path and comprehend Roe versus Wade...
Exactly. Perfect.
Yeah, you know, off to the liquor bottle I went.
Exactly. Or what's the one in Connecticut?
Griswold?
Griswold, which I love. I think Griswold is a brilliant piece of... And
it's legal engineering is what it is.
It's ends-based legal reasoning, right? Like, here's the answer we want to get. How do we get there? And it's because, you know, because they believed that was the right answer. They honestly believed it was the right answer. And so they saw within the Constitution the pieces necessary to get to that answer. So it matters, right? I mean, that's the thing about the Constitution. You know, this is a sort of postmodernist view, you know, the sort of legal realist postmodernist view of the Constitution, right? That it can be whatever you want it to be. Now, it matters who you elect, right?
Yeah.
It matters who gets to use the lens. Because the lens gets people put in jail without any chance of ever being heard from again.
It gets people killed.
The lens gets people killed. The lens you look at it gets people in this country killed. You know, it matters a lot. And I think that when you framed it beautifully, where you say, okay, what do we care about now, right? The people who want to vote for Obama are going to vote for Obama, right? Linda's parents were visiting us this last week. You know, there's no point in us discussing whether Obama is better than McCain with them, right? Because they believe that that the Democrats are going to take our guns, and that the right to life is very important.
Oh, you're sending my head back onto the desk.
But that's okay though, right? Because so those people are going to vote for McCain. I'm not going to convince them to vote for Obama. Those people are going to. McCain is going to say to those people, look, I believe in the right to life, and I believe that Roe v. Wade is wrong. And I'll put people on the court that will undo it. Right? And you need to understand, it can be undone.
Oh, yes, it can.
It was done. It was made. You know, Roe v. Wade isn't in the Constitution. It was made from the Constitution. And it can be unmade. Okay, so those people are going to vote for McCain. People like me are going to vote for Obama. Okay, like, simple, right? We're done. No need to fight for either of those groups of people. So I want to find somebody who, like you were saying, would have voted for Clinton and are now going to vote for McCain or not vote at all or write in Clinton in the general election. Those are the people that you need to say, wait a minute. This is what it means to lose this time. Right? It means no Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade, done.
This is John Stahl. This is how much longer can John Paul Stevens last?
What is it, three of them, they think, in the next term?
Yeah.
Every one of them counts. You know, it matters. And you gotta say, here's why it matters to you. I mean, it would have been great to have a woman president, and hopefully we have one at some point. But right now, that's not the point. Okay, now that we've gone through this whole thing, the point is the point is it matters who we elect. And just the same with the people on the left, on the right, are going to say, that's why we have to vote for McCain. There's going to be a bunch of people who say, you know, I was a Romney guy. I think I'm going to write Romney in.
They don't do that, Scott. They don't do that, Scott.
That's what I mean. You know, do you hear any of that? You don't think at all?
No, they've gotten it out of their system. Once it became clear that McCain was going to be the nominee, Connell ran down the dial of the old AM radio, and you know you hear the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the Savages and the rest of the freaks having their fits on McCain. Oh Jesus, I hate McCain. You know all of that stuff, and they got it all out of their system.
That's right.
And they are going to come together in typical, and I emphasize that, typical monolithic Republican fashion. You know, they've got a phrase, yeller dog Democrat. I vote for an old yeller dog for a bit. But Democrats cross party lines all the time. Those are the people who don't, Scott.
Right.
Yeah, because, and you know what? I predict that Dr. Dobson will come around.
Mm-hmm.
John McCain's been married too many times. He'll get over it.
Because, I mean, what's he going to say about letting Barack Obama choose the next three Supreme Court justices? That's a terrible defeat for the people on the right. They can't have that.
We must protect the sacred right of the fetus to life.
Totally understandable, though, right? I mean, if you believe the fetus has a sacred right to life, you have no choice but who to vote for.
No, right. Yeah, never mind that. Yeah, never mind the underlying hypocrisies involved. No.
Yeah, but you're not
on the surface of it. Yeah, sure, I get it.
Yeah, you're not going to have. I mean, not going to have friendly dinner conversation during which you're going to convince somebody that they're a hypocrite to thinking that, right? So, given the fact that you're not going to do that, those people, I don't even want to hear them discuss who they're going to vote for because you know who they're voting for.
That's kind of why I get so frustrated with all the polling data, Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you go, it's 47% Obama, 45% McCain, and the undecideds. Yeah. I don't know if the undecideds. Okay, this is me in a purely autocratic moment. Okay, so please forgive me.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like the O.J. trial. You know, to get on the jury of the O.J. trial, you had to say that you didn't know anything about the O.J. crime.
Right.
Anybody who said they did, who lived in Los Angeles County, who said they didn't know anything about the O.J. crime, probably didn't have any business tying their own shoelaces, let alone sitting on a jury.
Right.
The same thing applies to undecided. I mean, honest to God, if you're undecided between John McCain and Barack Obama, regardless of which direction you might be initially inclined, if you're undecided about that, even at this early stage of the game, if you're waiting for some piece of gotcha trash to come out that'll give you the out to go in one direction or the other, you just pretty doggone close don't have any business voting.
Right.
And I know that's elitist, and I know that it's autocratic, and I know it's undemocratic, and I apologize for all that, Scott. But
the other thing that's worth appreciating is how discouraged so many people are that they're just really not engaged. Because you've got to admit, I mean, the Congress has been so dysfunctional for so long, and the political system has been so dysfunctional for so long. There are a lot of people who have legitimately tuned out. Right, they're not in it like we, like you.
Yeah, they're just sitting. They're hunkered down, sucking their thumbs, and they're please, just don't take the house away.
Yeah, or whatever. You know, they're just like, look, let me just go to work because it doesn't matter. You know, really, you know, the Congress is all corrupt, and the corporation. We would argue that the corporations have control, and that's the reason. But maybe they would think that was the case, or maybe it's just that politics eventually corrupts because it's power, whatever. Right? They become disillusioned. And they're just not engaged in the process at all. They just don't care. And so I think there are a fair number of people, and we had this discussion going way back, right? Well, back when our boy Dennis was still in things, right?
Yeah.
Where, you start to say, am I really going to vote for a Democratic Party that's going to do to Dennis what they did to him? Right? Well, they stopped inviting him to the debates because they don't want to have to, you know, even address the issues that he raises. You know, it's just start to say, wait a minute, maybe I don't even want to play this game anymore. You know, maybe I need to go play a different game somewhere else. You know, try to find a solution for myself in my local community or something else where I can just unplug from these people and not care what happens. So, I mean, I could, you know, I'm just trying to be, you know.
No, I understand.
Your job is to get yourself attached to the ceiling tiles in the studio, and my job is to try to talk you down.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just, you know, it's like getting the cat out of the ceiling, you know, one claw at a time.
I mean, I'm being more reasonable than I really actually am, you know, because it drives me crazy, too. But I think that this is the work to do between now and then, right, is to get the people, because I think it's actually true that people who are jaded by the whole process are really only going to start to listen now. And I'm actually encouraged by that because, you know what, I can't wait for the first Obama-McCain debate.
Oh, I'll have the popcorn going.
Exactly.
Because it'll be bad, Bob. This is going to be Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston, okay? I mean, it's gonna be a beating. It's gonna be McCain on in the corner on the ropes. No mas.
Well, what he's gonna do is he is gonna keep reiterating the things that people have heard all along, and many people still believe it. You know, the country is at war. You know, the bad guys want to get us. They're our bad guys, and they want to get us. And you need me because I'm going to go get the bad guys. And that's what I mean, I was in the prisoner of war camp, and I know, believe me, I mean, I'll do whatever's necessary, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And Obama's going to say, here's why it matters who you vote for. You're at a fork in the road, and which path we go down depends on the decision you make. And he'll make it personal for people. And because I heard him do that. He did a really nice job. It's appealing. The rhetoric is very appealing because it's very personal. And you can see McCain just saying the same things that we've been hearing for the last 8 years over and over and over again. And Obama saying some things like, well, you know, that's cost us $1 trillion. That's a tax. Right? This is the hugest tax increase in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
This war. Right? Let's just call it a tax. What did you get for it? Nothing. Let's change the tax.
No roads, no schools, no Medicare, no Social Security.
No greater safety. We're not safer now than we were before.
No. It's just a big hole in the political firmament that we've thrown money into.
So I think it's actually going to be pretty good. And I think that you know, the quote undecided people. Okay, so we got a bunch of them because Hillary just suspended her campaign. Right? So some of those people are upset, and you can understand why.
Yeah. Right?
Because they got to see.
Yeah, but wow, Scott, I'm not trying to be cantankerous or mean spirited, but you know, when you hang the Democrats for McCain banner up on your website,
Who put that up?
Carolyn Kay.
So who is that? I'm sorry.
Make them accountable. She was on the show every Friday evening.
Okay. So,
and wow.
Well, that's okay though, right? I mean, what are you going to do about that, right? Okay.
No, I'm powerless, you know.
You got to talk these people down though. You got to say, are you really for McCain, or are you just pissed off about Hillary? Because the thing I think that's worth doing is to say, I understand why you're pissed off about Hillary, because America has shown itself once again to be a sexist and racist nation.
Yeah.
I mean, the way the media covered Hillary was disgusting.
Look, you know, way back when, how many months ago was it, Scott, when the Washington Post decided to remark upon her cleavage?
Give me a break, right? We're going to call her shrill.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to say she cackles. And she goes, you know, these words matter, right?
Yeah, it's like they were pulling stuff straight out of the Glenn Beck playbook.
And you know,
and they kind of were, weren't they?
And they were, but those. It's just like when they describe, we had hilarious this conversation this weekend about how Barack Obama changed his name from Barry to Barack.
Hey.
Know the story?
Yes.
Yeah. His name was Barry, and he changed it to Barack. Right? And so they're like, well, that doesn't sound like it could be correct. So we went and looked it up on, well, we looked it up on the Wikipedia, which I happen to think is reasonably authoritative, so, you know, whatever. And you find out, of course, that he's born the son of Barack Obama Sr., and he is Barack Obama Jr., and when he was in high school and college, his friends called him Barry.
Barry, yeah, sure.
It was a nickname. And at some point, he decided he didn't want to be called Barry. He wanted to be called Barack, which is his name.
Yeah, kind of like how Barney Fife's real name was Bernard.
And so you've got, so what we did is we looked and we found an original article. And the original article is in Newsweek, and it says in the headline something to the effect of Barry Obama, Barack's high school crew called him Barry. High school crew.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting choice.
No, oh, Jesus, at least they didn't call it his posse.
You know what I mean? I mean, would you people knock this off? You know, you wonder why the Hillary.
But this stuff is all coming from. I am far too jaded, Scott. I don't think this stuff just happens. You know, it's all. It's all Richard Dreyfuss from Jaws. You know, this is not a boating accident. Newsweek didn't just decide to scoop that. They troll the right wing websites. Okay. I mean, and that's the job of the right wing. I think it was Tom Hartman talking about it earlier this week, the fact that, the right wing has been paying people to go and post right wing talking points on blogs, like 15 cents a post or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Pretty smart if you think about it.
Well, sure it is. Sure it is.
If you've got that kind of cash, you might as well use it that way. Yeah,
God forbid we as liberals should do something like that. Oh, that wouldn't be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not allowed in Sunday school rules, but Michelle Malkin, okay, who is the child of illegal immigrants and rails against illegal immigrants and the children thereof, and she creates the Kathia controversy over a scarf that's not even checked but is in fact rather paisley, and it gets picked up, and Dunkin' Donuts is forced to, not that I give a damn about Dunkin' Donuts, they're owned by the flippin' Carlisle Group. I don't care if every one of them goes up in flames as long as there's nobody in it. But you know, they then turn around and pull their ad because they don't want to offend the right wing donut eating base.
I'll be maybe a little less sinister about it, but we'll get to the same place anyways. Which is, I think Newsweek does it because they know that it will make the kind of headline that people will actually read, right? Because you know what? It's a pretty stupid story.
But so is Britney Spears hoo-hoo flashing. But you're right. It's directed and demographized at the same people.
Exactly, and so they do it right. And I'm just gonna scoop back for a second and talk about the Hillary people just again, because I understand why they're pissed off. I understand why. We need to actually let them be pissed off for a while, because they have every right to be. And guess what's gonna happen between now and the general election? It's gonna be disgusting what's gonna happen between now and the general election.
Yep, get the hip waders on.
Alright? So right now, just in the next few days, the next few weeks, you know, the Hillary people, the people that backed Senator Clinton and thought she was an excellent candidate and it was a time for a woman to be president, and I think there's a lot to be said for that, that they need to be heard, because their annoyance and their psychic pain is real.
And they need
and
closure.
Then you ask them, McCain? Really?
That's the answer to the sexism? McCain is?
Exactly. This is where you have to go, right? You have to say, you know what? This is why I'm a Democrat and not a Republican. Even though I think the Democrats are so dysfunctional, I could just
bash their heads in. Yeah, that'd be crazy, right? But, I mean, come on, you know. I mean, I agree with you. Remember, I was going to write in Kucinich because I thought the Democrats needed to be punished.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Right? So I'm with you. I understand, you know. But the stakes are too high.
Yeah, this is not an alderman race. That's right.
And this is where you need to tell people, you know, the Constitution isn't what you think it is. It's not the bulwark against this kind of shenanigans.
It might have been designed to be, but that's not how it all played out.
That's not how it is. And so it matters. Don't think that you're going to not vote or throw away your vote or vote for the other guy. And that the Constitution is going to provide a stable structure wherein the America that you knew will continue to exist while you do your protest. Right? I mean, I can see that people would think that. You need to understand that it may not be true.
Not necessarily so. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I was, you know, when you called out for someone who's read the Constitution recently, it's important for people to understand how fragile the thing is.
It's written on flash paper, Scott.
You know, I mean, what did Bush say? It's a piece of paper. Right? What does that tell you? We better be real, real careful. It matters.
Matters a bunch. Scott, thank you very much.
Hey, you too, Bob.
Always good to hear from you. Give my best to Linda, please.
We'll do that.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye now. I'm all better. I am out of the tree now. Thank you, Scott. Yeah. Tell me where, again, sorry, not just trying to be a horse's rear end. Tell me where else that conversation happens. Hint, it doesn't anywhere but the horn. And we'll try one last caller before we head on into the sunset. Hi, who have I got?
You got Pat.
Hey, Pat.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, well, I know I'm calling right at the end of the show, and I wanted to put my two cents in as far as how my week without Bob went last week, and it was tough, and I really think people need to know and need to hear it. We gotta pay for this, guys, and I made it through last week, but
yeah, now bear in mind, I was not on strike. I was not on strike. Trust me, I wanted to be here.
And I have some good news. I have been hired on by the place I've been temping for.
Oh, yay!
So yeah, I have a real job and I have insurance now that's reasonable and I'll be able to up my contribution a bit. And
oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, I.
It just, you know, and again, I reiterate the fact that I hate talking about this stuff. Someday, somewhere out there is the person who's going to make it possible for me not to. But until that day dawns, folks like you.